goosebumps down my leg.
Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, the theme from Peter Gunn. Hey, welcome, everybody. You are listening to a phone-in talk show, and we invite you to be part of it.
Yes, we do.
WRI puts this time aside for all of us to talk. Me and Jolene, and you folks. Right at those phones is John waiting to get him. So give us a call, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. And if this is the first time you've ever heard it, this is nothing new.
Yeah.
42 years on WRIF.
Hey, Jolene, so you were out last week.
I was out last week. I hate missing the show. Yeah.
But your dog, Etta, was...
My little baby, you know, I don't have kids, but I have this, you know, my dog's in the world, just like you, Peter.
Yep.
And she has this inner middle ear infection thing. She was falling over like she was drunk.
Yeah, you were worried.
So was I. Yeah, you know, and these things take time to heal, but she's getting better, and she's still a little bit drunk.
She still wobbles.
I put her to bed and said, Mama, be back after she goes and talks some politics.
It was nice, though, how many people went to our Facebook page and said such nice things.
Thank you, everybody, for all of your kind thoughts. For anyone who has animals, you know they really are part of your family, and especially when you don't have human animals.
Well, I should send you the dog comics. I've never sent that to you yet.
Yes, you did.
I did. Okay. All right. Maybe I'll post that on our Facebook page,
which is
facebook.com/nightcall, and likes are wanted. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com is our
email. It's our email.
Yep.
We read it during the show.
You know, Thanksgiving was last Thursday. Everybody knows that. We all stuffed ourselves, or probably most
not
of us.
Not me.
Did. No? I did.
You know, I am not a big holiday person. Not, I think Halloween's kind of groovy, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what I did?
Right.
I'm a chef, right? Well, you know, I'm trained to be a chef. I had frozen pizza. By choice. By choice.
Well, we did invite you to our house.
You did invite me. I was feeling pretty worn out. I worked all day, and I just wanted to it was cold. I just wanted to be home. But thank you, Peter.
Well, Thursday was the official celebration, the third Thursday in November, and it used to be the fourth.
Yeah.
But the retailers asked that it be moved back to so there'd be more of a Christmas shopping period.
Yeah. You know, I guess, and Thanksgiving just actually kind of honks me off in general.
I like it.
I know what you like gathering with your friends.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the whole generation of the American Indians.
I just think about
it all day, and I just get mad. I get cranky.
Yeah, yeah. The whole deal is the Indians helped the pilgrims.
Yeah.
Right? Then they gave them blankets with anthrax. Or typhoid, whatever it was.
Right, yeah. Yeah. And then the white man just blew them all away. You know?
Yeah. Well, there is this whole spectrum. We were talking about what's happening in Gaza. White settler colonial states, of which the United States, Canada, Australia, South Africa, Israel, places like that, they got to get rid of the indigenous, right? The people that are there. Yeah, they go, well, those savages. And then they become savage, right?
Yes.
Because people get a little pissed.
Out of survival.
Yeah, well, they get pissed when you shove them off their land. Because here in the United States, when, for instance, we think of many times, and you see all these Hollywood movies about these, how bestial these Native Americans were, the Indians, as they called them.
Right.
And because they did things like scalping, right?
Yeah.
Except scalping, the first people to take scalps in the New World was Washington's army, and, you know, when they were doing Indian fighting. And the other thing they used to do as a big thing is that they used the breasts of this is pretty gross. Sorry about that. The breasts of Native American women as tobacco pouches.
No.
Oh, well, you know, you would do it if you...
No, I've never heard that.
You would kill an animal, make a fur coat, and these were animals,
oh,
right?
Oh, my gosh.
They were just in the way of Western progress.
I just, you know, that leaves one just kind of sick and speechless, really.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm even more mad.
Now that we've ruined everybody's
Christmas. Now I'm even more PO'd.
You know, Thursday was Thanksgiving, but it was also another anniversary, and it went by me and almost everyone else. And it was, Julian, went by you as well.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it didn't. What are you talking about?
It was the 49th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. It's going to be big next year because it's going to be the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, so you said it was the 49th, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. And a couple of years ago, I don't know if you remember, I said to Colin, somehow I don't remember you being here. We've been doing this together for 8 years, did you say?
Well, I 14 was when I started producing for you, and so I've been back, and then we did the syndicated for 3, but back here, I think it's like 7, 8 years, something like that.
Can I give a simple answer, please?
I'm trying to do the math. You tell me not to do the math on the air, then.
Okay. Don't do the math. But one point I asked, because the official history, it was the lone assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, that he was shooting from the Texas Book Depository building.
Yeah, I took that whole tour down there.
Got it? Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, pretty cool.
Got off a couple of shots and what have you, and changed history. Well, I said, call in. Let's not do it tonight. But I said, so this is what I did. I said, call in and tell me.
I was here for this.
Okay,
I remember.
Okay, all right, then you were. And then maybe it was only a couple of years ago, I said, I'd like to know, who do you think killed Kennedy?
I think
Oswald.
It was last year.
Was it?
Yes.
So I said, was it Oswald, the CIA, Texas oilmen, the Cubans, the Russians, the mob? Am I forgetting anyone? Anyway, or they don't know. And then I don't care category. And one of the things I wanted to know was the age, because normally we don't ask people's age, but it seemed to me that the younger people were, the more they would have the tendency to think that it was the lone assassin, Oswald, because that's probably what they were taught in school.
Yeah.
Except,
and the images, a lot of the images.
Nobody. There wasn't a single person. And most people thought the CIA. They probably got that from watching The X-Files, you know.
Yeah.
There was an episode about that. But to some
now
far,
that's a dated reference right there.
Someone said to me, but Pete, you never said who you think killed Kennedy. And I said, I have no idea.
I know.
I don't
even try guessing.
Well, we talked to people. What's his name? Alan, I've interviewed him a couple of times. He thinks it's the mob. It was a mob hit.
Okay.
Essentially, which doesn't make a bit of sense to me. But he's got like a 600 Lamar Alexander.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little hard for me to argue with him because he's got all the facts, all the research and all that. But his contention is that the mob, because of the Kennedy brothers, was doing such damage to organized crime. And I'm thinking, you're going to kill the president? It's going to take the heat off you? That doesn't make a bit of sense.
Right.
All right. So we'll leave that. But
boy, that did get biased, didn't it?
Yeah. Hmm. I was looking at this right-wing website. In fact, there's this right-wing website that, a radio program, talk show that I always listen to coming in. There's three right-wing talk stations in Detroit now, which is good because they're killing each other.
Yeah, they can just infight all they want.
Yeah, and they're, taking each other's audience. So I always listen to this one guy because I want to hear what they're obsessing about at a particular moment. And this one guy, it's like he learned nothing from the election. He's tonight. He's calling on Barack Hussein Obama.
Was he really? Yeah. I mean, you know what, Pierre? They're never going to quit.
Yeah,
they're just never going to stop.
And that's what we should be aware of. But from this right-wing website, where is we'll give this one. But this is yet again President Obama's Thanksgiving message eschewed. Why couldn't they have found a better word than that? They eschewed. In other words, he didn't give any direct reference to thanking God, marking this the fourth straight year in which the President of the United States has ignored the central message of the holiday in favor of political grandstanding. Now, how's that grandstanding if you don't mention God?
I mean, I think it's going by what the Constitution is set up as.
Yeah. As for God, here was the only mention as a throwaway line in a hackneyed aphorism. What the hell is he talking about? At the end, he says that we ought to roll up our sleeves and get to work, not for the recognition or the reward, because it's the right thing to do, because there for the grace of God go I, and because here in America we rise or fall together as one nation and one people. And so the website says, not one mention of thanking God. None!
None! And then he says, it's no wonder that this president's Democratic National Committee platform tried to remove God. He's not a big fan of the big guy, even on Thanksgiving. After all, what need do you have for God when you've got the state?
There's a state.
Okay, what the hell does that mean, first of all?
Well, none of it means anything.
It's just babble. Psychobabble.
It is.
Religious psychobabble.
Religious psychobabble. Indeed. I don't get it. So
I mean, he said over and over, President Obama has repeatedly said that he's a Christian.
Yeah.
You see images of him in church. He's always, that one reverend. Let's go back to that. Remember?
Oh, he's a Christian.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he's popping in and out of my... Oh, yeah, about thanking God. So we think that God... Let me not mess with the pronouns here. They think that God should be thanked because that the reason that this is the wealthiest country in the world, even though it has the highest level of poverty in any industrial country, and,
2 in 5 children go to bed hungry every night.
Right, and all of that, that this is because God has blessed us. So what has he done, like, to Mexico and El Salvador and Honduras?
Yeah,
and
we're very religious countries.
Yeah, so God has punished them because they weren't as righteous as us?
He's this white God who doesn't like people of color. That's knowing these people, that's what they would go with. I don't know.
I mean, every drawing I've ever seen is God and Jesus are white.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, wasn't Jesus a little Jewish guy?
I think he was a little Jewish guy, yeah.
Yeah. So his being with a big capital H, birthday's coming up on the 25th of next month. And yet, one poll says 45% of people would rather skip Christmas.
That's me. I mean, first of all, I'm an atheist, as you are, but every year I get more disgusted by the commercialism of it.
Do you have to buy presents, like, for your parents and stuff?
I donate things.
Yeah, that's what I do.
You know, and, one year I actually, they have these socially conscious catalogs.
Sure.
I bought some scarves from women who made them in Afghanistan. In fact, I bought one for myself, too, and all kinds of things. And it's so funny because my mom, I remember one year I got these little ornaments that the women in the villages of Afghanistan made. They were beautiful. And she kind of held it up and looked at it and just kind of, like that. I thought, oh, God, why do I even try with this woman?
Oh, Gaia, you know.
Oh, Gaia, yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
that's the god of nature, goddess of nature.
That's right.
But
so this pole.
Yeah, well, not even the pole. I was just going to pick up on what you were saying. My wife and I do not give gifts to anyone.
Right.
But when someone gets married, when someone has a birthday or anything like that, we say we are, right before the election, it was costing me a fortune, actually, of contributing to Planned Parenthood because they were so under attack as part of the Republican war on women. So I was, you know, just going up to the Planned Parenthood.
On Woodward there?
Yeah, on Woodward. And I was thinking, you know, I walked in there, I had a leather jacket and sunglasses on, and, you know, I'll tell you, they're so worried about right-wing crazies.
Yes. And well, they should be.
They didn't look nervous, but they kind of look like...
Like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, so I took off my sunglasses and gave him a big goofy smile, you
just,
know.
Here to donate!
And as soon as I pulled out my credit card.
Yeah.
They do great work for women.
And so women's health.
Women's health, yeah. Well, anyway, Think Finance, a provider of payday loans and other financial services, they surveyed 1,000 Americans, and what they found out was that 45% of those polled said the holiday season brings so much financial pressure, they would prefer to skip it altogether. Another half said their level of stress related to holiday expenses is high or extremely high.
Yeah. Well, it's ridiculous. People go to these lengths to get these gifts for people, and they go into debt, and then they spend the next year paying off those credit cards, or however long it takes, if they ever do.
And the same amount, 45%, say they do not expect to have enough money set aside to cover holiday expenses. Now, it should be noted, the survey focused only on consumers who earn less than $50,000 and use alternative financial services. Well, yeah, I mean, those are the people that are pressured to spend because they want to appear loving to their children,
right,
to their family, to their friends, yeah, and what have you.
And kids expect a lot more these days,
and
too.
They can't afford it, and things are much, much more expensive.
Yes, they are. Yeah. And there's so much more to purchase. I mean, you know, it's the whole, what's the big toy of the season? I mean, people are about killing themselves over these things.
Well, it's Black Friday that occurred. This is supposed to be the big shopping day, and I don't know if you saw those videos of mobs, literally.
I didn't
mobs.
See any of them.
Oh, my Gaia.
Really? Was it unreal?
Well, people, I mean, like 1,000 women charging into Victoria's Secret. Oh. And then there were people shot and stabbed. And
there really were.
Not a Victoria's Secret.
You know, I actually looked for some of that. I couldn't find, you know, it seemed, I thought there was less of it in Detroit this year.
Well, I don't know if it was in Detroit, but the average purchase was $453.
My gosh, so people do have money. Huh?
Gosh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's better than God or Gaia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
So where, people, do you have
just
money?
Just don't say, oh, my golly.
Oh, my, okay, I won't. Credit cards. People are going into debt.
Yeah, well.
Spending all of this money. You know, I have an idea. How about you just say, why don't we go out for a nice dinner. We'll all go for a nice dinner.
Yeah, Bob Evans.
Go to Bob Evans, get yourself some mashed potatoes, and call it a day.
And links, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, Black Friday. So I thought, who in their right mind would go to that crush? Because it will...
Not me.
Yeah, you know, in a week, those sales will still be there and all that. And one of the things it tells you about retailers, they could afford to be charging a lot less all the time anyway, right? If they can do it then...
Yeah.
Black Friday, and tomorrow, Monday, is Cyber Monday.
Yeah, and it was local, shop local Saturday or something.
Yeah, shop local Saturday. Well, that's...
I didn't shop either of them.
No, I didn't either. Yeah. Well, you know, they're counting on consumer demand and consumer purchase to boost the economy. I think if everyone thought like you and I, Julian, capitalism would collapse.
Yeah, right. But we do our fair share year-round of...
Well,
purchasing things.
I would say though.
I mean, I'm low on the consumer scale, but I still buy things on a regular basis.
Food. Gasoline.
Clothing once in a while. You know.
I gotta say, the way. Now, let me hear me out, folks, before you go, oh, that's disgusting, and hang up. I mean, I am affluent. I have everything I want.
Yeah.
Which, in much.
Yeah, you're simple.
I don't want, what?
I think you're pretty simple.
I live simply.
You live simply. Oh, you're not simple of mind by any means.
Well, I mean, I don't want an iPhone 5. I don't want a tablet.
That's your wife.
I don't want a Kindle. I don't want a fancy car.
Yeah.
I don't want what? What do people get these days? I don't want, you know, I mean, I look nice enough. But
you always look nice.
What am I wearing? A Levi's and a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
And increasingly, you can go anywhere like that.
That's right.
You know. I mean, yeah. In fact, sometimes when, like, when I go to rock concerts, I go like this. When I go to the symphony.
Or, you mean what otherwise known as your nap?
Yeah, the symphony or the opera. I put on a sport jacket and slacks, and then I'm looking, and there's people wearing Levi's.
I know.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, hey, later for this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Black Friday, and mobs of people, I wonder who in their right mind would go. And then I started talking to people, young people, who were in it for, like, they thought it was just the craziest thing to do.
It was fun.
Yeah, so is there any Black Friday shoppers out there that want to give us any stories? I'd be curious.
And do you really feel that you saved a lot of money?
Yeah,
was it worth it?
Or did you just do it because, hey, it was like a flash mob or something
does.
Like that? Yeah. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number here. It was also a big day nationally of protests against Walmart.
That's right.
Walmart, and by the way, thanks to Terry, who's written a couple of emails to me. He said that he wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said, you often state that the Walton family is worth almost $100 billion. According to Forbes, he says, they are collectively worth $107.1 billion. They are the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th richest people in America. He says it's easy to see they could pay all their employees a decent wage and benefits and still have over $100 billion. And he says it's sad they're so damn greedy. What the hell do they need so much money for? Well, they don't. And
just to have it.
And you know,
on that list.
No. And Terry, it is, it's not really money. It is wealth. If we, you know, money is what we have in our pockets or what we have in our bank account or what we have kind of tucked into our credit cards. Wealth is what you know, Scrooge McDuck has in his vault. And you can't do much with it, and they're not doing much with it. It's just kind of held there. And so it doesn't do them any, because once you pay, you know, you pass your first $10 million, and $10 million, is nothing. I mean, I can't even do the percent. $10 million is what percentage of $107 million?
No, math.
All right, someone.
I forbid you.
Okay, someone email. It's called
Matthew. My friend Matthew.
Okay.
Math was. What?
What percentage is $10 million of $107 billion?
Okay.
It's not very much, I'll tell you. Anyway, so there was these protests all over, and Terry writes, I'll be at one of the protests on Friday. I hope to see you if I don't enjoy the one you're at. So I went to this one. I figured, you know, I do not want to go to the Oakland Mall or...
Because of Black Friday.
Because, because there were lines or traffic.
You might not make it out alive.
Yeah, well, I might not even make it into the shopping center. So I thought, I'll go to the Sam's Club on 8 Mile Road.
Yeah.
What would it be? West of Lazar. And you go there. I mean, nobody there.
Yeah.
And they had it on the website. If you go to my website, by the way, you can get all this information about the campaign that's attempting to make Walmart be what?
Better employers.
Be good employers. I mean, even if they were better, they would still be awful.
You're right. You're right about that. And it's funny because someone we work with in the building, who watches Fox News, said to me, well, you know, that something about how they're all union members. And I said, okay, I see what you're watching up there. And if that is what you're getting from this, well, first of all, they're lying to you. Or you're just not paying attention because they want to unionize.
Sure. And when they do, the experience has been so far,
Walmart closes
the store. So these multi-billionaires, these people that have a fortune double what Bill Gates has, because they don't want people making more than $10 an hour. And you can't even figure why. It's not, you know, companies want to keep their costs down because and labor's a cost. And so if they can save millions, I mean, here's billionaires, but if they can save millions, or probably tens of millions, their stock is worth more. Or if they want to sell it, they can sell it for a higher price because they have less liabilities, which is why the company destroyed Hostess, which isn't what you read, but I will.
Not the Twinkie!
The Twinkie, yeah. But you know what happens when you don't have unions? It's what just happened in Bangladesh. 112 workers killed in a clothing factory fire, making U.S. brands. And what's that, some of you who know your labor history, what does that remind you of? The shirtwaist fire in New York City in somewhere in 1908 or maybe even 1912. This might even be the centenary. When you go to the lower Greenwich Village, there's a marker there. And, you know, this was before unions, before before regulations. Well, two things that secure what we have as workers. One, government regulations. And two, unions. Unions set the standard for wages, for safety concerns, for retirement, for days off, for overtime, all of that. And then it gets codified into law. You don't have it, this is what you have. And this is what these Republicans want. They want to roll back regulations, right? Like maybe on compounding pharmacies, like the people that put out that stuff that gave everybody meningitis.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you want less regulation on those job creators?
Oh, boy.
I mean, these people are... Anyways, anybody go out to any of these Walmart protests, either here, I know some of you are listening around the country. Walmart in big trouble. Where is it? I think it's in India. They're all involved in this scandal of bribery. But one of the things that the Walton family did, which founded Walmart, they're going to save $180 million in federal income taxes after they announced that it would pay out its quarterly dividend on December 27th instead of January 2nd. So they're taking $180 million out of the public treasury, which will have to be made up by, guess who, you and me,
that's right?
Rather than these multi-billionaires. And what happens, it allows the family to record the income this year when the federal tax rate on dividends, in other words, you're investing, and for some reason or other, the richest people get to tax that income from their investments at only 15%. And the rate will jump to almost 40% unless they come to some deal over this, financial cliff
issue.
Yeah.
So-called.
And a lot of the companies are doing that, trying what they call accelerating their dividend payments, that skip out of paying taxes. And the White House has said dividends should go back to being taxed at ordinary income tax rates. Those commies!
How dare they!
Yeah, in other words, can you believe that? They want these rich investors to pay what you and I pay? Don't they know these are the job creators?
Yeah, don't they know
that? All the jobs.
That's the only reason we're here?
Yeah, all the jobs they've created since they've been taxing their dividends at only 15%. This was before, as they were before, the 2003 tax cuts pushed by, through by Bush. It's at 15% now, and they're sure that it'll, rise to at least 20%. I mean, why should it just be income? I don't get this. I mean, they're still playing off this mythology that jobs are created when rich people have more and more and more wealth to create jobs. But as we've said so many times before, it is about demand. Well, I don't know. I think we can take a break right now because I want to come back and, you know, the traitors are at it again, the traitors, T-R-A-I.
Which ones?
These secessionists.
Oh, yes.
Don't they say the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible. Indivisible. Hello?
Yeah, but they can go. Bye.
With liberty and justice for all. Did I leave anything out of that?
Oh, wait. How about that? Did you say under God?
Oh, no. That's the way it originally was. A socialist, a Christian socialist minister devised that. He didn't put that in there. So, I don't know. A bunch of crazed right-wing anti-communists in the 50s stuck that in there. You know? Under God. What does it mean, under God?
I don't understand. I don't know.
Come on, there's got to be language. If language is not precise, it becomes able to be, easily.
Imprecise.
Yeah, well, then, and easily manipulated. Let me see. Don't somewhere.
And by the way, taking your phone calls at 313-298-WRIF or 313-298-9743.
Yeah, but here, well, I'm trying to get to my website here. Do it. Click.
What you need, Peter?
Click what it says on there. Yeah, right. Socrates says the misuse of language induces evil in the soul.
I think it's true.
The misuse of language induces evil in the soul. So what does under God mean? Or what does it mean that President Obama doesn't thank God every
5 minutes?
Thanksgiving, every 5 minutes. Exactly. Well, the traitors are at it again. They're the ones that caused the problems in the first place. They, you know, they demanded slavery be approved by the founding, that all men are created equal, a big democratic revolution in 1776, and we wound up to be a slave state with a slave trade, right? And this is because of these southern states, and they're at it again. They create a civil war, then they create segregation, then and now they're giving us the damn hard time again.
They just can't help themselves.
So here, what can we do to aid these slave states to get the hell out of here and let the good people of the United States go about our business?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remain good.
All right. We'll give you some ideas. You give us some ideas as well.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Would your opinion be heard? Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Weekend. It's brought to you by the NIAT College of Technology in Canton. Aviation maintenance and renewable energy classes are starting soon. Call 1-800-NEW-GOLD or click on miat.edu.
If you're like me, you probably had to do something hard today. I mean, personally, I hate washing out socks. That's why we made Geico.com so exceedingly easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance. Easy to review and update your policy. Change of address. Just a few clicks and you're done. Visit Geico.com today because life is hard enough. I mean, I don't even wear socks.
The gift of time is timeless, particularly when it features the stunning modern designs from the legendary Movado watch collection. Find it now at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry. Long considered one of the premier Swiss watchmakers, Movado has redefined the modern design aesthetic for over 130 years. Movado, modern ahead of its time at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry today. Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
We all know how important it is to back up our computer files, but actually doing it is such a hassle. So get Carbonite Online Backup. Carbonite backs up your computer files for you, automatically and continually. With Carbonite, you'll never have to remember to back up again. Unlimited backup space for your PC or Mac is just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com with no credit card required. Use offer code PROTECT and get 2 free bonus months with purchase. That's Carbonite.com. Offer code PROTECT.
Everything that rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Most of all, most of all, someone
WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Tim from Romeo asks, why did you shop at Sam's Club? This weekend, Sam's Club is owned by Walton's. By the Waltons, by Walmart. Yeah, I know that. There was a protest there. I wasn't going to go.
Well, he did not shop at Sam's Club or Walmart.
I didn't do it. A couple of things we've been talking about. The right-wingers have their shorts in an uproar because President Obama has never thanked God directly for what we have. I don't get why he should. Maybe you do. You can give us a call. Almost 50% of people say they'd like to skip Christmas because of how much it costs and... what else are we talking about? There's some, oh, yeah, secession. How, the traitors are at that again. But I did want to just this note. I mean, there were so many good things that happened in this last election in November. But one of the things that happened, that one of the biggest whack job of all, Alan B. West, a congressman, a representative from Florida, Southern Florida, he came in this wave of people not voting. I say the people have spoken. I mean, nobody voted hardly at all other than teabaggers in 2010. So a lot of these nut jobs got in. Like Joe Walsh, not the guitar player, but, you know, guy in Illinois. So a lot of them got blown out. And so finally, they got rid of him, and he lost a 29-year-old guy. Now, West is an Iraq veteran, but he's crazy. He accused the Democrats in Congress of having 80 members who are communists. 80 House Democrats are communists. He said President Obama is probably the dumbest person walking around in America right now, and he said that Obama supporters with bumper stickers are a threat to the gene pool. Obviously, the Florida voters thought the opposite was true. But I thought it was interesting that Alan West was in there because all the Republicans support the use of torture. But West was only, Congressman West was the only Republican ever to actually do it. Because when he was in Iraq, he got busted out of his command post because after he pled guilty to assaulting an innocent Iraqi detainee during interrogation. He threatened this Iraqi police officer with a pistol, threatened to shoot him, and then blew off his pistol right near his head.
Wow.
It was the one night. He'd never conducted a witness interrogation before that he'd been an artillery commander. And just at a point where there was all this criticism about Abu Ghraib and all that, the United States was trying to clean up its acts, he fired his pistol near the head of the prisoner, threatening to kill him, and allowed his troop to beat the man, to beat him. Said West, yes, there have been some sporadic body punches and shoving to the individual, which I witnessed, but did not allow it to get too brutal. Well, why don't we do it to you, ex-Congressman West?
Jesus. Gosh.
He admitted to pushing the head into a clearing barrel full of sand, which is typically used for clearing weapons. He then put his gun into the same barrel and shot it twice.
Wow.
So good riddance.
Anger much?
Bad rubbish.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, West. Okay. All right. Let's hear. Here is Chris in Raleigh, North Carolina. And hey, I don't know, Chris. You got a secession movement going there?
Not at all, Peter. You know, it's funny. I grew up listening to you as a kid. Moved away from the state 4 years ago, and I just jumped back in on a plane, and I'm back here in Pop John. I was kind of curious, though. I mean, I left the state because of work. I'm a construction worker. I was a unionized construction worker. And went to North Carolina where there basically is no union. My pay is the same. Quality of work is good. Actually, safety is more on the job than what it was locally.
Well, you're lucky. You're lucky.
Now, that is the point. You are lucky, and that's good. And what's happened in a lot of places, in order to keep out unions, like some of these southern auto manufacturers, what they've done is tried to keep the pay scale and the benefits and what have you the same as the union would provide, and that's what I mean about unions creating the standard. And I'm surprised in North Carolina, which has immigrants often willing to work even sometimes under the minimum wage, that you still have the
work. Yeah, those conditions.
having work, getting paid well, and the conditions are good, and very satisfied with the quality of the work and the lifestyle without the union.
Well, listen, there's not a union here now. I belong to the union, but there's not a union here at WRIF, and I'm satisfied with the way everything goes down. I mean, you have to ask the other people. I mean, there's certain things, too. I mean, there's grievance procedures, for instance, and that means that, the arbitrariness of a single boss saying, hey, you're out of here. And into the contract, it says, what you can and can't do. The boss can say to you, hey, you're standing around, go clean the toilet. And you can say, hey, that's not in my job specs. And he says, there is no job specs here, whereas unions work that out. So a lot of people work at non-union places where they're perfectly satisfied. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, historically, that the unions have created the 8-hour day. I mean, with that, you say, well, people say, oh, it's all done. It's going the other way now. And like I say, Chris, if you've got it good there, you're lucky. But if you want to keep depending on luck, go for it. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Art and Roseville. Art, hi. You're in the air. Welcome.
Hi, sir. Nice to talk to you again. I noticed last week and this week you threw out the idea that maybe the secessionists and the right-wing nuts should, get out of here and leave everybody alone. I got news for you. The ones who should get out of here is the ones who don't believe in that which made America the greatest nation on earth.
I agree. So you agree with me that all the racist and intolerant people and the misogynist and the anti-gays, they ought to go somewhere else, right?
No, what I'm saying is that America is about individual and individualism and free market capitalism, and you don't have a right to...
Wait, free market? You reading the same Constitution? You ever see what is assigned to the U.S. government in terms of regulating trade and everything? Are you out of your mind? You'd really want a free market where nothing is controlled and you could pay people anything they wanted? And you know what it was like in the 1840s here?
I would like laissez-faire capitalism without a bunch of moronic bureaucrats getting in the way of enterprise. For instance, the city council in Detroit who won't let that little farming operation come in there because these morons have to...
Try to talk, I call people morons or right-wing nuts and all that, and I use it sparingly, try to at least do a few sentences, and I know what you're talking about. I mean, this company wants to, grow trees, right? Art, are you with me?
The most I heard about it was some kind of agricultural operation.
Well, wait a minute. If you don't know much about it, let's go on to the more general thing. The free market means that we'd all be working for the wages that people are working for now in China and Mexico, and that we'd have safety standards like we have, like they exist in Bangladesh, where there's just a fire that killed 112 people. You have to have regulations, Art. Come on.
Well, that's your opinion.
Well, of course. What did you think I was giving? Somebody else's opinion?
The reason you love to throw around the word democracy so much is because you think that when you get control of the moronic mob, you're going to get to change capitalism and freedom. But I got news for you. You got no right to do that. And remember Mark Scott, the talk show host?
Now, talk about right-wing nut jobs. That guy.
This guy's just getting better by the second.
That guy was Sam was short of a picnic, Art.
Oh, but let me tell you what he said, which kind of responds to what you said.
Okay.
He said the guy called up and he was drooling over European socialism and all the benefits, like free health care and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Scott said to him,
go there. And that's what I say to the leftists in America.
Really? No, I think that's what you told our producer, that Peter should go somewhere.
There's a thing, my country, right or wrong, if something, if it's right, support, if it's wrong, make it better. Yeah, the whole thing, and people have been saying that moronic statement, if you will, excuse me, that was a little joke, for a long time. And when people wanted the 8-hour day, and when they wanted to give women the vote, and when they wanted to have a weekend, and when they wanted to have retirement, and all of that. A lot of that actually came about simultaneously. The call for it came about simultaneously from the labor union, from the left, in both the Europe and the United States, beginning like in the, some of them back to the 1840s, but mostly in the 1880s. And so the free market, which isn't really free, just sent out the troops. We talked about the troops, the Pinkertons, the cops, and just shot women and children down, beat them at clubs, fired everybody wholesale because they had the temerity to want a living wage, a weekend, an 8-hour day, a 5-day week, overtime, benefits, safety standards, and all that. If you have the free market, you don't get any of that. It's like China. It's like Bangladesh. You're anti-American, Art.
Let him answer.
All right, go ahead. Yeah.
Could you talk about Hostess a little? I'd love to hear your opinion.
All right, good.
We'd be happy to, Art.
All right, Art, I'll be glad to do this. Let me just get some open lines here, 313-298-WRIF. Yeah, this is great, Art. You're people are going to think I'm, you're like a confederate or a stooge setting me up. All right, here's Michael and Fenn. Michael, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Wow, that was interesting.
I agree. I
thought Peter was having fun with that guy, though, pretty good. Julie, we missed you. You got to quit going away like that.
I'm not going anywhere. Thank you very much, though. I did not like not being here.
Yeah, Peter does a pretty good show, but I just, just to let you know, when you're there, it's a little better.
I think so. No, I agree. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Yeah, I know you would, because that's the truth. But the thing is I'm a Christian, and I called to talk about the Walmart thing. But I just wanted to inform everybody that Christians, they don't go around talking about the president like that, and they don't go around judging people. A real Christian doesn't judge people. They love people. And so there's a bunch of people that call themselves Christians, but they're not Christians. They're hypocrites. And so to be a real Christian, you have to love everybody, and you can't go around judging anybody. And that's what a real Christian is. And we don't have very many of those in this country. We're very few and hard to find. But Walmart, I hear that they have a store down there in suburban Atlanta. And, they caught a guy shoplifting down there, and they choked him up and killed him. He died.
Yeah, there was here. Actually, let me quickly. If I had a real computer here, I could get to it. A man suspected of shoplifting two DVD players from a Lithonia, Georgia Walmart today died after an altercation with two store employees and a contract security guard, prompting a police investigation. He'd exited through the front door of the store at 1:30 a.m., was confronted in the parking lot. When officers arrived at the scene, they found employees on top of the middle-aged man, according to police report. When an officer bent down to handcuff the suspect, they noticed there was no resistance. He was bleeding from the nose and the mouth. Hey, those $8-an-hour security guards and store employees were on the job, right? They're protecting the property of these billionaires. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
I got you. All right, Michael, thank you very much, as usual. 313-298-WRIF. All right, Art wanted to hear about the Twinkies, right? This was the Hostess Cupcake.
And everyone's heard about this, of course.
Right. Now, and everybody's heard about it in the manner that Art, I think, probably assumed would make his case. Here's a typical headline. Twinkies bakers say they'd rather lose jobs than take pay cuts. So here's an example that the right wing, this has been a major right wing talking point, by the way, on like Faux News, how do you spell that? FAUX.
Right? Yeah.
And what have you, to show not only how greedy unions are, but how stupid they are, because
in their opinion,
they would rather lose their jobs than take a pay cut. Now, who in the world would be that stupid? I mean, even if you had to take these cuts that were pretty big, if they wanted them to cut, I can't.
Which one are you looking for, Peter?
I'm looking for the one where it tells actually how much they wanted them to cut back. But oh, I see. They would get an immediate 8% pay cut, a 17% reduction in the hostess's contribution towards health coverage, and a suspension of its payment, pension payments.
God.
And like that. So that was a big cut. But you would still think, how dumb are these guys? I mean, this is what our thing, this is, and I don't blame him, or I don't blame anybody who's thinking about this, because why in the world would they do this? Well, guess what, folks? This was this big company scam. Here, this wasn't even intended. This is from the business section of the New York Times. It's a liberal paper, right? But they are about business. They are about ruling class financial capital. So they want their peoples to know what the deal is. The bakery workers union with 5,600 workers at Hostess repeatedly said that it saw no reason to grant a new round of givebacks after having granted major concessions in the previous bankruptcy of Hostess, because it was convinced that Hostess was heading towards liquidation with or without concessions. So do you get this? They would have given the concession, driven the price of their labor down considerably, driven down what Hostess was contributing to the health coverage, and suspending pension payments, and then what? So what's why? Why would they do that? Because when they sell off the assets, they'd be worth more money. So it was a huge scam. It was a huge scam. This is the Twinkie defense. Remember, that was the guy that assassinated the mayor of San Francisco and Harvey Milk, the gay leader, councilman, back in the 70s. And the guy said he'd been eating so many Twinkies, he said he'd lost his senses or something like that.
Well, you know what struck me about this whole thing was that that everyone in this country is talking about Twinkies, and it's all over Facebook. It's, should I go buy the Twinkies? Did you find any Twinkies? And meanwhile, Israel and Gaza going at it. Israel's...
Wasn't that all over Facebook?
No.
Joking. Get this, too. That union, which is the Bakers Union, and Hostess's other major union, the Teamsters, repeatedly asserted that the company was mismanaged, having had six different chief executives since 2002. So here's who's really behind this all, and here's who's going to benefit. This is a typical, remember this guy, what was his name? Mitt Romney.
Oh.
Remember him?
I do.
Bain Capital. That's like saying Monica Lewinsky all of a sudden. I mean, Mitt Romney has disappeared.
Which I'm so glad about.
Yeah. Mitt Romney disappeared from public consciousness quicker than any major figure I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, just poof.
And again, good riddance to bad rubbish. I mean, for sure.
There was a picture that showed up of and Ann on Thanksgiving. Boy, he was just all casual. He honestly looked like 15 years younger, just relaxed. And
did you see the photograph of him pumping his own gas in La Jolla?
Yeah. I did.
But anyway, so here's what it was a Bain Capital scheme. One of the things is you bankrupt the company, you sell off the assets, you make millions and millions or even billions of dollars, and the workers get screwed. So they've had six different chief executives. So the workers are really dumb and bad and mean and greedy and all that. And yet these company executives are the ones that screwed it all up. The unions maintained that Hostess's top management had done little to modernize the company's aging bakeries or its sugary product offering in an era when the nation has grown increasingly health conscious.
And so, Craig Jones wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Sorry, usually I just give first names, but Craig has said, don't forget the Hostess executives all gave themselves massive pay raises on the way out.
Yeah, yeah. So, Art, yeah, go eat a bunch of Twinkies.
Go eat a ho-ho.
All right, we never did talk about the traitors, these secessionists, that don't believe in the pledge to the flag, one nation, indivisible. They don't believe in that, obviously. They didn't believe it in the first place when they signed on. They only signed on so they could keep slavery, you know, beginning of the country.
Yeah.
And then when things got a little uncomfortable, remember, you know, it wasn't like Lincoln said, I'm going to abolish slavery. In fact, he said, pardon me, if he could preserve the Union and preserve slavery, he would do it. So, they created, this war and then segregation and then this whole civil rights movement. So the traitors are at it again, and we'll talk about that when we come back.
And we'll take your phone calls.
Too. And here, a priest we know has been excommunicated.
Yes.
We'll tell you about that.
Go figure, we know him.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Clipping coupons. Standing in line at 4 a.m. Buying five to get one free. Maybe it's me, but I don't think it should be that hard to save money. Which is why we made Geico.com so easy. Just a few clicks and you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. And when you switch to Geico, you can do practically everything online. Report a claim, update your policy, even pay your bill. Click, bam, boom. Visit Geico.com today. Click, bam, boom. I'm rather fond of that one.
The gift of time is timeless, particularly when it features the stunning modern designs from the legendary Movado watch collection. Find it now at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Long considered one of the premier Swiss watchmakers, Movado has redefined the modern design aesthetic for over 130 years. Movado, modern ahead of its time, at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry today.
It can only be Jared!
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at jared.com.
Rockin' Detroit at 101.1 FM and the rest of the planet online at WRIF.com. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. The 12 Days of Riffmas are back. Keep listening for your next chance to win. Details online at WRIF.com. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much. It is our second hour. We got one more hour to take your call. Some open lines for you at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't be shy.
And there will be a podcast available in exactly 12 hours. Thank you, John, who is taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF in an hour. I will be interviewing John Bellamy Foster, that has one of the longest book titles I've ever seen, but let's just call it The Endless Crisis. And what he's talking about, this is, you know, well, I'm going to start apologizing or something, because, you know, I always say this is not an entertainment show. That's not why WRIF has this set up. If it is entertaining, I mean, that's good. And if it keeps you listening, I mean, that's good. I mean, we're not doing this to drive anybody away. But normally, people on talk shows aren't going to, and particularly on a rock station, aren't going to be talking about the economy like, you know. But given what we're facing, given the crisis that we are facing, these guys talking about the endless crisis, we better know some of this stuff so we don't go off in some crazed direction.
Like the Tea Partiers.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're being so nice to him. Not calling the tea baggers.
I mean the baggers. What happened to me? Why am I being nice?
But anyway, this John Bellamy Foster is talking about how decreasing expenditures on production, which is what the people with all the money are not doing, and instead funneling increased amounts into the stock market, this is causing a long-term economic slowdown. And so you'd say, whoa, we had people really shopping on Black Friday and all that. But that, you know, that's going to involve a narrower and narrower sector of the population. And
I think people are afraid that we asked people, the listening audience, did you go?
There were no Black Friday.
Shopping on Black Friday.
Nobody called.
Maybe I don't know. Maybe they're ashamed.
No, I don't know. I know people would say, hey, it was a blast. I saved lots of money.
I want to know if you did save money.
Also, Jay Feldman, who has written Manufacturing Hysteria, a history of scapegoating, surveillance, and secrecy in modern America. And this happens during periods of war and economic downturns. Who did this? Was it the Jews? Was it the Chinese? Depends on where you are. If you're in Germany, it was the Jews. If you're in Indonesia, it was the Chinese.
Right.
You know, they always managed to figure out it was the other. It wasn't. They're never really willing to look at the people at the top of the pyramid, because those are the people that have control of things, and those are the people that cause the problem, like right now, right? Okay.
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Morrison.
For that little expression of Calvinism.
Right.
We're always ragging on religion and what have you, but there's some really good people that operate in the world under the banner of religion. Not just Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, you name it. Well, I could name them all, but I won't, because there's lots of them. All claiming that their God and their religion is the only one, but whatever. The good one, But the good ones, you know, don't say that. The good ones aren't going to go try to burn out their neighbor because they believe in this brand of Catholicism or Christianity
or
Islam or what have you. But Roy Bourgeois, who is a Roman Catholic priest and is best known,
good friend of ours.
Yeah. He has led the protest at the School of the Americas at, where's that? Fort Benning, Georgia, which is where all of these Latin American soldiers from these torture states have been trained. I mean, they're told.
And they go back.
Yeah, and kill.
They learn how to kill people.
Yeah, essentially. He's been excommunicated because he's an outspoken advocate for the ordination of women. In other words, women could become priests. I didn't realize he was that old. He's 73 years old. He was a Marian old priest for 40 years. He was in the United States Army in Vietnam, served in El Salvador as a priest. And in 2008, after he participated in an ordination ceremony for a woman, the Vatican told him to recant or face excommunication. Are we still in the Middle Ages or what?
Recant!
Its doctrinal office ordered his dismissal on October 4th, but now Mr. Bourgeois...
no longer reverend.
Yeah, who said he believed he was in the midst of negotiation with his superiors, did not learn about it until Monday. Anglicans having some problems as well. Over in London, the Church of England, which essentially is like Catholicism, I'm pretty sure, except they don't have a pope. That, you know, the Church of England and all that. Who was it? Henry VIII or somebody like that? Said he wouldn't let him keep divorcing or beheading all his wives. I may be confusing a bunch of English kings, but it was something like that. So they set it up with, I think at one point the King of England was the head of the church, but now they're, you know, they just got their own deal. And Episcopals are usually pretty liberal, but they were voting whether to appoint women as bishops, and it got voted down. So even the head of the Church of England said that the church had undoubtedly lost a measure of credibility. I mean, I couldn't care less. I suppose it's good, you know, that women get the kind of status that...
there are women who want to be priests.
Yeah.
They should be able to be priests.
I may have talked about this. I think I did talk about this last week. A deeply religious man, sounds familiar, in upstate New York, who believes a church's giant crucifix cured his wife of cancer, had his own leg amputated.
Yes, we did this story 2 weeks ago.
It was after the giant crucifix
fell on him and off went the leg.
All right, good.
We are so cruel.
Yeah, we are.
I love that story.
That is terrible. 313-298-WRIF. Here is David in Detroit. Hi, David. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, what's happening? Nice to hear your voices again.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, David.
So, you know, it's funny. I was going to ask you something else, and I still will, but on this Black Friday issue, mm-hmm. I saw an interesting post on Facebook, and I wonder if you saw it too, but it just said in big, bold letters, Black Friday, because only in America will people trample over each other to obtain things when just the night before they were giving thanks for that which they already had.
There you go. Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. But
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, what you thought, or in the circles, progressive, liberal circles, what they thought of the odds of right to work passage in Michigan now that Prop 2 failed.
Yeah. Well, let me just spell out for people who might not know what it was. Proposition 2 on the November ballot lost pretty badly, and mm-hmm. what that would have done would have enshrined the right to collective bargaining for public employees into the state constitution. And there was
surprised how handily it lost.
I wasn't. In fact, I said, I don't know whether it was last week or probably right after the election, David, I said, I should hire myself out as a consultant, because I knew it was a loser right from the beginning for a lot of reasons. A lot of people resent unions because of the money they make, and they don't, rather than realizing the positive role that unions play in all workers, whether they're unionized or not. And that's not to say, by the way, I don't have criticisms of unions in general, the way they operate in the United States, and specifically for some, and some specifically. But in the main, that unions play an important role in protecting the wage standards and what have you benefits of all workers. So now the Republicans have the bit in their mouth, as they say, and they're going to try to get what they've stolen this language very nicely called the right to work, which it really isn't. It's the right to make unions weak. And what that means is that if you're in a workplace and you vote in a union, say you have 500 people and 400 people, 500 workers and 400 vote for the union, then the other 100, even though they don't want to be part of it, they are required to pay dues, and usually the company takes them out of the pay. And then the union, though, bargains for everyone, including those 100 that don't want to be part of it.
Right.
And the grievance procedure is there, and the wages, and what have you. Under the right to so-called right to work, what it's called the right to scab, that is the right to work when there's like a strike or something, that a worker who opposed the union would not have to pay any dues at all, and yet the union would still represent
him.
I mean, that's what's such a load of crap.
It really is.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, though, that Randy Richardville, who's the Republican Senate Majority Leader in Michigan from Monroe, he opposes taking up right-to-work legislation, saying it's too divisive, and that's what Governor Snyder, the Republican governor, says,
and would have little effect on job growth because less than 20% of the state's workers are unionized. But, these Republicans are so vindictive and so in the pocket of the corporations and want to make sure that they drive down our wages that they probably will go ahead with it. And I suspect that Snyder there's some question as to whether or not he said he would sign such a bill. But he does not want a divisive fight. He's got some plans, and having a fight over whether there should be a law with this, so-called right-to-work law isn't on his agenda, as he says.
So he says.
Yeah. So.
Well, from what I could see, it wasn't. Right up until they went ahead with Prop 2. And now the rumblings around Lansing are completely the opposite. It seems like it's just gone from, let's leave it off the table.
Right.
We got other things to deal with. And now they're going fast and furious. And you're right about Richardville. Richardville, I've heard him complain, several times about, his district and what makes up his district. And he'd like to do, certain things and can't because of his, the constituency that makes up his district. But I can tell you there's a petition for recall for Richardville, and I think they've got the signatures that they need. So
really?
He might be pressured into it anyway. And I don't know. I'll call you in a couple of weeks, and we'll talk about this again because I have a feeling this might move quick.
Yeah, I'd like to know about it because, again.
I think he's on to something.
Yeah.
Sounds like he really knows.
All right.
Thanks
David,
for the call.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Keep us abreast of that. Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize winning
New York Times
economist and columnist for the New York Times, has written something called the Twinkie Manifesto, and he says he's talking about the 1950s, the Twinkie era, where everybody thought that
that's what it came about.
Well, I think that actually goes back to 1930. Yeah, but he says consider the question of tax rates on the wealthy in the 1950s. He says the modern right, today's right wing, and much of the alleged center is obsessed with the notion that low tax rates at the top are essential to growth. That in the 1950s, incomes in the top bracket faced a marginal tax rate of 91%. Right now, it's like, what,
31%? People probably can't even imagine that.
Yeah, that's right, 91%, while taxes on corporate profits were twice as large relative to national income as in recent years. The best estimate suggests that circa 1960, the top 0.01% of Americans paid an effective tax rate of more than 70%, twice what they pay today.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Nor were high taxes the only burden wealthy businessmen had to bear. They also faced a labor force with a degree of bargaining power hard to imagine today. In 1955, roughly a third of American workers were union members in the biggest companies. Management and labor bargained as equals. Squeezed between high taxes and empowered workers, executives were relatively impoverished by the standards of either earlier or later generations. In 1955, Fortune published an essay, How Top Executives Live, which emphasized how modest their lifestyles had become compared with the days of yore. The vast mansions, armies of servants, and huge yachts of the 1920s were no more. By 1955, the typical executive, Fortune claimed, lived in a smallish suburban home, relied on part-time help, and skippered his own relatively small boat. And it says the data confirms Fortune's impression. Between the 1920s and 1950s, real incomes for the richest Americans fell sharply, not just compared with the middle class, but in absolute terms. This was called the Great Compression. There was the Great Depression. There was the Great Compression. In other words, there was this huge redistribution of wealth in the United States. Okay?
Yeah.
And so, that's socialism, communism, liberalism, progressivism, whatever you want to call it. In 1957, the real income of the top 0.01% of Americans were less than half what they'd been in the late 20s. So they lost a huge share of total income. And Krugman says, today, of course, the mansions, armies of servants, and yachts are back bigger than ever, and any hint of policies that might crimp the rich lifestyle is met with cries of socialism. Pardon me. Indeed, the whole Romney campaign was based on the premise that President Obama's threat to modestly raise taxes on top incomes, plus his temerity in suggesting that some bankers had behaved badly, were crippling the economy. Surely, then, the far less rich-friendly environment of the 50s must have been a disaster, right? Well, of course, the opposite was true. When the rates were high, the tax rates were high on the rich, where unions were strong, things were a lot better. But some people thought they were bad, he writes. Paul Ryan and many other modern conservatives are devotees of Ayn, or as they like to say, Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
Well, the collapsing, moocher-infested nation she portrayed in Atlas Shrugged, published in 1970, was basically Republican Dwight Eisenhower's America. Most people would say, except for a few things like segregation, not to be scoffed at, were a little bit better now that the rich are behaving like it was the 1920s, and what's ahead? Ooh. Here's Terry and Ken. Terry was at one of the Walmart protests. Terry, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you, Peter.
Hi. Is it you who I was emailing?
Yes, it was.
Oh, good. Well, welcome to the show. So you went out to the Dearborn protest, right?
Was anyone there?
Yes. Oh, there was a few dozen people.
Good. There should be more, but it was better than the one Peter went to.
A few dozen. I thought I said in the Detroit News there was like 200. No?
I don't think there were that many. There were a lot of people. There's a YouTube video of it if you just search those names on their site.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't
Walmart protest in Dearborn.
Oh, you know, Terry, I'm going to interview somebody this week, which will be broadcast next Sunday, that was part of the whole national movement. So I hope there was more than a couple dozen at other places. But anyway, this was a part of a whole nationwide movement.
And where a lot of the workers were going to walk out.
Yeah, to demand that Walmart pay decent wages. They can afford it. I mean, they can afford it just the owners that what did you say, are worth $107 billion together?
Yeah, according to Forbes, yeah.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking of what they could do for the country if they would just pay those people decent wages and benefits.
Yeah, because as Gene Simmons from KISS told me, they're the largest employer in the United States of America.
You know,
when I asked him why he was selling his album only in Walmart stores.
You know,
no,
he's
not.
You know, Terry, that's interesting that you said that. I just heard somebody on a radio show, I can't remember where, was talking about that if Walmart raised everyone's wages $5.
Yeah.
That, which would they be making then? 13, they'd be making $26,000 a year, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm, but how many, and I don't want to quote figures because I don't want to exaggerate or underestimate anything, but that would create jobs because it is demand that's going to create jobs, not rich people having more money to invest in production, which they do the opposite of. They just take more money and invest it in the stock market, and or average person doesn't get anything. But anybody who's working for Walmart, who's making like $16,000 to $18,000 a year, if all of a sudden they started making $26,000, they would be spending a lot more money and pumping that back into the economy. So it would be a stimulus from the market. All these people say socialism, you know, because the government really needs a huge stimulus program right now. Hundreds of billions of dollars from the war budget and put it into domestic spending for reconstruction of infrastructure and schools and hiring back teachers and cops and firemen and what have you, EMS, all those people. So that'd be a government stimulus. But if they want this so-called free market, which doesn't exist and never has existed, they would do, firms like Walmart would do well to pump up their employees' salaries big time. Yeah,
they could save the whole country too.
Well, it would.
Yet they won't.
Yeah, no, they won't do it, and they'll fight tooth and nail. It's like we're repeating it. We're heading, with a lot of people on the right and the left say that we're heading, this is just the blip, and we're heading towards the big depression coming up. I'm not saying that's the case. I have no idea. I don't think anybody really knows.
Not.
But it's like the 1920s now with increasingly with workers' wages going down and the wealth of the 1% going up. And, so here we are back like it was 70 or 80 years ago fighting for union recognition like this is the Flint sit-down strikes or, fighting the Ford Motor goons attacking workers. Yeah. So, all right. Thank you
for checking in.
Terry.
Glad to hear
You're
from someone.
Welcome.
And thank you for going out and doing your part.
Absolutely. All right. I'm just laughing because that's what my sister says all the time.
She does? Sister and I have a lot of similarities.
Absolutely.
I say that all the time, too. I think anyone who listens to the show on a regular basis can attest to that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you can be my second sister.
Really?
Yeah. You know what? I thought, what, do you want to be my second wife?
Yes.
I don't know if my first one will go through that.
Some days I think she would.
Right. When I'm misbehaving.
Yeah.
Not picking up my socks.
You're always misbehaving.
We've talked about that, haven't we? That the women in a household have hundreds of rules.
And we do?
Yeah. And the men have zero.
I want to tell you what. I am more of a dude in that regard than I am not a neat freak. I don't have a bunch of rules in my house. I just want everybody to be happy. And I don't care if there's a pile of clothes in the corner. Really don't. Do not care.
I mean, I come in, I say, where's my keys? Where's my cell phone? And they've been put away in this drawer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Put away. Okay. Yeah. Now that drives me nuts when people move my stuff.
Yeah. Who moved the cheese? All right, let's go to the traitors. We keep threatening to do this. And your opinions on this secession. Here, I'm saying, you know, these Southerners, these slave state folks, always have been the cause of the major strife in this country, and they still are, right?
They're still at it.
So they want to, and since President Obama's overwhelming reelection, it's getting, by the way, the vote totals for President Obama are getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
They are?
Oh, yeah. They're still counting hundreds of thousands of votes.
Yeah,
they're doing it slowly.
Okay.
All right. And so,
I'm glad it went that way and not the other way.
So, a lot of these conservatives are wondering how to proceed, and some conservatives in Texas, it says in this article in the New York Times, have been asking a far more pointed question: how do we secede? I mean, they never think, how do we succeed?
No, I know.
How do we
secede?
Yeah. Secession fever has struck parts of Texas.
That means removing yourself.
Yeah, right. And there's this one nutball named Larry Scott Kilgore. And wasn't that a Kurt Vonnegut? No, that was Kilgore Trout. But anyway, Larry Scott Kilgore is going to change his name to Larry Secede Kilgore.
Oh, please.
Doesn't that remind you of the guy that got the Romney tattoo on his face?
Yeah.
Anyway, he sells bumper stickers that say secede. He sends out an email, and he has a petition filed. And that it, oh, what, no, this wasn't him, but he just, for some reason, has, where did I see, just his first initial. And it's on the White House website, because you can go to the White House website, and if you file petitions, you get something like 23,000 signatures, you'll get an answer.
Okay.
I mean, you might get an answer. I mean, I guess President Obama answers individuals time to time. He obviously can't answer everybody.
He does?
Yeah. Write him a letter.
Really? I don't really have much to say right now. I'd have to think.
Yeah.
You stayed out of my ovaries, so
yeah,
that's a good start.
My
uterus.
Yeah, that's usually what you say. The secession movement in Texas is divergent with differences in goals and tactics. One group, the Republic of Texas, says that secession is unnecessary because it claims Texas is an independent nation that was illegally annexed by the United States in 1845. The group's leader and other followers waged a week-long standoff with the Texas Rangers in 1997 that left one of its members dead. Now, they're cute.
That's cute.
Yeah. They say our economy is about 30% larger than that of Australia. That's old Mr. Secede Kilgore. But I wonder what would happen if they weren't part of the U.S. I mean, if we took away all the army bases, for instance, right?
Yeah.
Took away all the subsidies for the airports and all the other federal facilities and what have you. Right. Well, here in Charles M. Blow, who writes in the New York Times every Saturday, Lincoln, Liberty, and the Two Americas, he's talking about this increasing split. He says, some have moved to make our divisions absolute. The Daily Caller reported last week more than 675,000 digital signatures appeared on 69 separate secession petitions covering all 50 states. Can you say sore loser?
Yeah. I mean, that happened even here in Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, come on. They're putting them out in states where, I mean, so in other words, in Massachusetts, isn't that where he got, Obama got the largest vote, I think?
I think so.
So that's where Mitt Romney was going to hold his victory celebration.
Yeah, fireworks and all.
I mean, wouldn't that be weird if Romney would have actually, they would have got all the money, would have won, the big money that he got, the billionaire money would have won. and the shenanigans that they were planning with the voting machines and all that.
Yeah.
You know, people claim, I was saying this last week, or was I, that increasingly people are saying that the, that, what was it called? The ORCA system that the Republicans had in place for, I'm not sure, social media or what, but that the reason that Karl Rove was so dumbstruck on Fox News the night of the
election
is that he thought the fix was in.
And he was saying, doesn't shock me.
Yeah, right. Well, there was shenanigans in Ohio in 2004 that gave Bush the election.
Yeah.
Put together.
How could we ever forget that?
Right. So anyway, so he's going to have this celebration in the state that was either the first or second
largest vote for Obama,
and have $25,000 worth of fireworks in the in Boston Harbor.
Yeah.
And 90% of the people in Boston would have turned their backs.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about being out of touch. Were you there when I said, yeah, you were there then. I'm trying to think what, no, when I said that, when I was looking at the Romney, victory party, that it looked like what you see when you go to the Townsend Hotel in Birmingham.
Oh, the clientele?
Yeah, the clientele.
Certainly.
Whereas it was
rich white people.
Rich white people. Whereas you went, when they showed Chicago, it was the rainbow of America, white and black and Asian and
I look at those, if I saw those two rooms side by side, I would go immediately into the one with diversity. I wouldn't even want to go in the one with all the rich. How boring.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they don't, what was that guy's name? Lawrence Welk? Is he still alive?
No. He's been gone for a while, I think.
Well, they probably still have his band. They could bring him into play.
Yeah.
Now, how about this, you know, for you all, you remember Ron Paul, too? The former Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul took to his congressional website to laud the petition on those bent of leaving the union, writing that secession is a deeply American principle.
Wow. That's a bold and crazy statement.
And traitorous statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Ron. Remember,
you've done flipped your lid, Ron.
Remember the last time you guys tried that and wound up with 400,000 dead? Tried to kill my great-great-grandpappy? Only wounded him at the Battle of Lookout Mountain.
I swear that we're just kind of going backwards. These people are going ass backward.
Yeah. No, bass ackward.
They're all of the above.
Yeah, that's what you said. Yeah. And, they would like, I'm sure, to go back to like, 1800. You'd still have the slave trade.
Women barefoot and pregnant. Don't let them vote or don't edumacate them.
And let's not, if we want to be fair, not put that on them. I'm sure a lot of them would like the idea of having only white propertied men vote, because look at the way they've tried to exclude people.
Things will
from
go
voting.
Their way then.
And let me see the article. Charles Blow says the internet has been lit up with the incongruity of Lincoln's party becoming the party of secessionists. But even putting secession aside, says Charles Blow, it is ever more clear that red states, Republican states, are becoming more ideological, strident, and creating a regional quasi country within the greater one. They're rushing to enact restrictive laws on everything from voting to women's health services. And, you know, I got to tell you, there is not this stridency on the part of liberals or progressives or anything like that. I mean, I think there should be. Because one of the things that that liberals are doing, progressives are doing, when you look at the polls, they're doing everything that people want. Here in also the poor, whining, sore losers, the Republicans, it says in Wyoming, conservatives feeling left behind.
Poor babies. Yeah. What happened now, Peter?
The share of white voters and white men specifically,
manly
white men, shrank in this election as turnout grew among blacks, Hispanics, and Asian Americans, whose support for President Obama more than compensated for his losses among whites. Now, it turns out that, and this again, why, I mean, you know what, you know, they, remember, were you here when I was talking about how I thought, even though it's used by the New York Times and all that, what a disparaging label it is to call people minority voters.
We did talk about
that.
That's
terrible.
And that's because I said I'm clumped in there, women and minorities, right?
They're Americans.
Do you know how that feels?
To say you're a minority?
Well, women and minorities. I'm clumped in all of that. To be called any of that is...
Well, if you...
Disgusting, really. I mean...
So, but right now, who they're calling... Essentially, that's what they're calling non-whites.
Right, people of color.
People of color. They don't want to say that. They make up 28% of the electorate. Well, that's not... That's just still... It's not much. The only thing is that in order to win an election, that if that's solid, and you add to it gays and Jews, Muslims, people like that, let's put that up to maybe 30%. In order to win an election, the Democrats need 21% of white voters, whereas the Republicans need 51%.
That's right.
Yeah. So they've kind of screwed.
The math is on our side.
Yeah, right. And a proportion that's expected to grow. So the Republicans are saying, well, how can we get those colored people on our... Well, not all of them. We know we're not going to get them, but we can we can get Hispanics because, well, maybe we'll change our complete thing on immigration. Yay, y'all come on in.
I am so glad we resigned from the white race so many years ago in the interest of humanity.
And
it's embarrassing.
And they can figure, well, you know, we got enough gays in our party. You know, most of them closeted, right?
In Congress.
Yeah, in Congress, hidden on pages and what have you. So they could change that. The only thing is, if they start changing all of this and start trying to get their presentation, not their core messages, across, they're going to alienate the crazoid base that they have. That's, you know, that's xenophobic against, you know, all foreigners and also, you know, the gay thing is not going to go over well. So I don't know. Oh,
they have a real tough time with that one.
But here in this, and this is Jack Healey.
Okay.
He says, none of this ensures election wins for Democrats. The tide of minority voters, that helped elect Mr. Obama in 2008 ebbed just 2 years later in a welter of populist anger over budget deficits, job losses, and Mr. Obama's agenda, allowing Republicans to retake the House and make gains in the Senate in the midterm elections. This is mythology, folks. This ain't what happened. What happened is that in many ways, Barack Obama represents a rejection of everything that has screwed this country up. And so it was like people said, okay, we're going to go vote for Obama. And then they didn't show up 2 years later.
Yeah.
But these teabaggers are like dogs on a bone. The election turnout is never very big. I think it was like, 2008.
30s. It's always around 30%, isn't it?
Oh, no. It's much higher than that. They'd cancel them if they were that low. For primaries. Primaries, sometimes they're under 20%.
Yeah, that's...
But it was up. I could have been as much in 08 as like 58% turnout, and I think it was down to like 52 or 53%.
Okay.
So, you know, almost close to half the people didn't even vote. And then, as you're saying, then come the midterm elections, and the vast majority of Obama voters stay home.
They're like, well, we got him in. We don't need to worry about all the rest of this mess.
All the Republicans. And so the people have spoken. The people, you know, didn't speak whatsoever. It says there's no guarantee that the next Democratic presidential... Wait a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a different subject. But I predict, unless things change dramatically, that's exactly what's going to happen in 2014.
So let's keep talking. Yeah. We're not going to let it happen here.
Let's get some people on the air. Oh, do this. Robert in Farmington Hills, Paul in Plymouth, and Mike in Jackson. You hold on. We'll get your calls right after these.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Everything that rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com. How would you like to see customers through your door today and the next day and the day after that? I have the answer you're looking for. RiffDeals.com. Hey, you're online now. Just click on the banner in the player window to find out more. Remember, there's no upfront cost to you. It's a partnership, but your success is the goal. WRAF's marketing pros work with you to develop the perfect deal. Then RiffDeals.com uses the power of on-air, online, and social media marketing to help you reach new customers. Oh, did I mention that you get a check within 10 days of your successful deal running? That's cash in your pocket and customers in the door.
Detroit's rock station rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com.
WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. This is our final segment at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. We have a couple of interesting interviews. One about what's ahead for us economically. The other about scapegoating. And I want to get to my phones. Excuse me, our phones.
Thank you, Peter.
It's just that I'm pushing the buttons.
Right.
If you want to trade places.
You just keep on doing what you're doing over there,
okay.
Peter.
I mentioned last week.
I mean, I could do it, but I wouldn't cut people off like you do.
There you go.
I'm just kidding.
I know. You would do it differently.
Yes, I would still do it, though. Yeah. I would be a lot more mean.
Yep, you would. Last week, I mentioned that the city of San Francisco, the Board of Supervisors, was going to vote on whether to ban public nudity. And they voted 6-5, and the vote means there'll be no more lounging nude in the city's plazas, parading up and down streets without pants, or riding subways and buses bare-bottomed.
Fun haters.
Yeah. Scott Weiner.
Well, you know what? I was reading this article, and it's always these guys with the last name Weiner.
That's right.
It's a complex. It's a thing.
But he represents the Castro District, which is the gay district out there. People are thinking, I thought all of San Francisco was the gay district.
No.
No. He introduced the ordinance after an increase in the number of habitual nudists and a rise in complaints from residents and business owners. And
don't live there, then. It's the Castro District, for crying out loud.
Well, they're going all over the place. After city supervisors approved the ban, the crowd at City Hall erupted in loud heckling and booing. Gerhard Clark, 55, shouted, "Recall Weiner! Weiner is a Republican!"
Oh, he
stood up along with half a dozen others and stripped to the buff. Another woman, pulling off her shirt, yelled, "Shame on you. What are you afraid of?"
That's what I would have done.
Anticipating the new protesters, sheriff's deputies draped them in blue blankets and led them out of the meeting hall.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. And they're talking about what you could get fined, about $100 or something. On most sunny or even moderately warm days here, a handful of naturalists, known locally as the Naked Guys, can be found reading newspapers or stalking around the Castro District's Jane Werner Plaza, looking like an out-of-place flock of pale and ungainly birds. Well, that's not very nice.
That is not
Everybody
nice.
Everybody can't be body
that's
perfect.
Very judgmental.
Yes. They're going to, as long as it's not lewd or offensive, public nudity is legal under state law, but San Francisco and other cities, prohibit it, including San Jose and Berkeley.
That's the two most unlikely cities, not San Jose.
So, if you go to San Francisco, you
got to... Keep your clothes on!
Well, yeah, there was a 60s song, if you go to San Francisco, wear flowers in your hair. You got to wear a little more, folks.
You need a little, what do they call that? The leaf?
There you go.
Adam had the... What leaf was that?
Fig.
A fig, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Fig leaf. He realizes nudity. Here's Robert in Farmington Hills. Thanks for your patience. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say, all these people that don't like what's going on in the United States, why don't they just all get together and, you know, tie some boats together and leave? But don't say you want to have the land. Just go see if you can go someplace else and do all this crazy stuff.
Well,
the United States.
Yeah, I hear you. Know, Robert, years ago, maybe, I don't know, maybe the 80s, maybe 90s, something like that, all these racist skinheads wanted to start some Aryan nation up in Idaho. And I'm thinking, that's good. That's good. Can we get them all out of our lives? And maybe there. And, you know, also in the 1960s, there was a folk singer, a singer-songwriter named Phil Oakes. And he's saying...
O-C-H-S.
Yeah, Mississippi, find another country to be part of. So,
thank you.
Maybe we could just, you know, we got to get a little bit of a population transfer, though, you know.
Yeah, don't, if you don't like the United States, leave it all together. Leave the land for us who do like it and stuff. You guys go someplace else. See if there's another country that'll take you on.
Well, yeah.
But I feel bad for those people in that country.
Yeah, that's real bad.
You know, and they're all upset, right? They're all upset.
Yeah.
And because Obama, man, this is long. I was going to tell Jolene to read it, but it might be worth doing this thing about. This was from a couple of years ago, that was addressed to the teabaggers. And it said, 8 years of Bush and Cheney. Now you get mad. You didn't get mad when the Supreme Court stopped a legal recount and appointed a president in 2000. You didn't get mad when Cheney allowed energy company officials to dictate U.S. energy policy. You didn't get mad when a covert CIA operative got outed. You didn't get mad when the Patriot Act got passed. Mm-hmm. You didn't get mad when we illegally invaded a country that posed no threat to us.
Based on lies.
You didn't get mad when we spent over $600 billion, which now it's up like to a trillion, on an illegal war. You didn't get mad when over $10 billion, and now it's $20 billion, just disappeared in Iraq. You didn't get mad when you found out we were torturing people.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get mad when the government was illegally wiretapping Americans. You didn't get mad when we didn't catch bin Laden. You didn't get mad when you saw the horrible conditions at Walter Reed Hospital. Remember that deal?
Yeah.
You didn't get mad when we left a major U.S. city, New Orleans, to drown. You didn't get mad when we gave $900 billion in tax breaks to the rich. You didn't get mad when the deficit hit the trillion-dollar mark, and it says you finally got mad when the government decided that people in America deserve the right to see a doctor if they are sick. Yes, illegal wars, lies, corruption, torture, stealing your tax dollars to make the rich richer are still okay with you teabaggers and Bush and Cheney, but helping other Americans under Obama, hell
no.
Oh,
hell no.
Yeah, it's crazy. Real crazy.
It is, and it's just, I thought, you know, maybe that crazy would kind of surpass because the baggers aren't getting as much attention, but it's not happening.
No, well, the Koch brothers are still
at it.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much, Robert. Appreciate your call. Here is Paul. Paul's in Plymouth. Go ahead, Paul. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. It's Paul from Plymouth. Hey, I wanted to highlight the movie Red Dawn. I don't know if you guys
the
seen
movie
it,
what?
The remake of Red Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. You cut out.
Yeah, it was shot in downtown Detroit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's in theaters now. And I just wanted to kind of highlight how that impacted the Michigan economy when it was shot here. With the employment of, like, I think it must have been a couple hundred local film crew and from various unions to even down to all the private businesses that, you know, benefited somewhat, you know, by supporting different things to the needs of the movie.
Did you see it when it was being filmed? They had these buildings all with these, like, the, you know, the United States under a dictator, under a communist dictatorship, and they had these huge signs on these downtown buildings. They had everything roped off, and tanks down there, and everything. It was pretty interesting.
Did not see. Wow.
Yeah. You know, if you want to see some of the icons of Detroit and different, you know, street corners that you would recognize in the film being blown up or, you know, shootouts, it's really cool.
Yeah.
You got to see it.
Cool.
Okay. Can I say one more thing though?
Sure.
I wanted to see what you thought about the, is this a done deal for Detroit with the legalization of marijuana for what, up to, is it 1 ounce?
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to come down because, you know, there's still federal statutes, but generally in these areas where use is not too flagrant, the government hasn't come in. On the other hand, they're really cracking down, the federal government is. On like medical marijuana dispensaries in Los Angeles, but I mean, there's hundreds of them out there, and it's obvious that it's not all about medical marijuana, and a lot of it here isn't about medical marijuana. It's people can just go in and get a little note from their doctor and go buy, you know, or either go buy or grow some weed.
Well, when would this go into effect? If this, you know, they voted it in Detroit. From what I understand, 21, you got to be 21 or older.
Right.
And you can possess, I think, up to 1 ounce, and I think only on your own personal property. I don't think you can just stroll around with this stuff.
No, I think sales are still illegal, aren't they, under that?
I would think so.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, I don't know much about it. Maybe someone's listening.
I don't either.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't have
legs. It didn't get a lot of press.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all these right-wingers like Nolan Finley from the Detroit News and Bill O'Reilly, they're just going, hey, our country's going, you know,
Hey, it would probably save the City of Detroit Police Department a whole lot of money by just, you know, doing away with this.
Absolutely. You know, it's caused one of the deficits, part of the deficits, that there's been $1 trillion spent on the war on drugs. Everyone knows drugs have won. But beyond that, you know, it is a matter, it's like the military industrial complex as well. It takes our tax money and then uses funds all sorts of jobs for, you know, police work and the courts and prison guards and the whole prison industrial complex. So it does have an impact on the economy to some extent, but that's not how you want to run an economy, making criminals of your fellow citizens because they want to change their consciousness. Come on.
Or heal themselves.
Or heal themselves.
Let's go there.
Or just get high.
Hey.
Yeah.
Peter?
Yeah.
I recently just, you know, maybe 6 months ago, I did get my medical marijuana license.
To what?
Self-medicate.
Okay.
For a chronic pain issue I had.
Not non-specific back pain. Yeah, I hear you.
Right. But it was very interesting, you know. Of course, you know, as like any other owner also who indulges from time to time, you know, you have to find someone to purchase this stuff from. But it was just kind of neat for the first time in my life to be able to go into a place and have someone offer me 25 different varieties.
Wow.
And from marijuana to hashish to, I don't know what this Kief stuff is. Is it like resin or to the brownies to... You name it, all the way down the pop, soda pops to
really, they have lime pops.
Literally, soda pop you could buy that has THC in it. So it was kind of eye opening.
Well, I have a hemp shirt. Best I can do.
You're so hip, Peter.
All right, Paul. Thank you very much. Yeah, I have a shirt that's made out of hemp, which a lot of stuff.
I used to have some pants made out of hemp. Yeah.
The sails of the USS Constitution, for instance, are made out of hemp because it was.
I know.
Yeah, you could weave with it and all that. And people said that it is so sturdy when you buy a shirt made out of hemp that it is actually an heirloom for your grandchildren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It lasts forever.
And the,
you're right.
Oh, you saw that. And the buttons have the marijuana leaf on it.
Why don't you wear it next week? Yeah.
Here is Mike in Jackson. Mike, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. I was trying to find Hostess Yellow Cupcakes, blah, 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 and then I'll speak from conviction, and then my favorite talk show, WRIF Night Call, advertised Deja Vu. And yes, I want yellow cupcakes, but sincerely, we should get a deja vu here in Jackson. They shall come. Everybody, everything closed. They're all driving out of town to casinos. There's nothing here. Deja vu is cool. I'm alcoholically challenged. I want to go where there's Coca-Cola and stuff like that. I hope
and naked women.
Should we talk about? Let's talk about the Hostess cupcakes in respect to the lady.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I don't care. Listen, I'm no lady.
Okay.
That was no lady. That was my wife.
If they built a deja vu here, everybody's driving out of town and stuff like that. My buddies, they wouldn't be getting drunk and stuff like that.
Yeah, because you can't serve alcohol at deja vu.
Right.
It's totally nude.
Oh.
How I know these things? Don't ask.
Yeah. Well, they're open till 4 a.m.
I know a lot of things.
They said it was open till 4 a.m. I was wondering how they do that.
Yeah.
And they probably, your sponsor, Deja Vu, they probably have less problems without serving alcohol. Not that I'm offended and stuff like that. But let's try to figure out this yellow cupcake math. They said it was management and labor. From being an American, I think it was a distribution problem and stuff like that, because I went in the grocery stores and they didn't have the Hostess there and stuff like that. And then the retailers were throwing 9 cents extra and stuff like that. And I love Hostess yellow cupcakes. I will. And it was a distribution issue, or what's your take on the labor issue, Peter?
Well, I kind of talked about it before. Like I said, I think they were getting ready to sell it all off, to sell the assets, like Romney's Bain Capital did to a lot of firms.
Their profit will be larger in the end. So it was all kind of all planned.
Yeah, yeah. All right,
that's
Mike.
That's our take.
Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Deja vu.
How about this?
Go to Jackson.
In Alabama. I wonder, do women go to those places?
Yeah. Get in free.
Really?
Don't ask me how I know these things. Well, I know a lot of things.
Well, since they advertise in WRIF, do you think they would like... of course, all we'd have to have is a stub from a sporting event, right? We could go there.
I don't know. You know what? I actually did a gig when I was jocking more here at Riff than over at CSX. And I got paid to go to Ipsy and hang out there for 2 hours with these naked ladies.
They're completely naked, huh?
Yes. Well, they become naked.
You know, well, I told you this. One of my producers before you was a nude dancer.
Wow.
And I forget
and you got rid of her? What?
And for some reason or other, she...
What am I doing here?
She insisted...
I come in here in sweatpants.
She insisted on dancing at the club, not here, with her glasses on, so they advertised her as the librarian.
I love it.
I said, why'd you wear your glasses? She said, I wanted to see the audience. And I'm thinking, I wonder why.
You know what?
What?
I'll tell you what. I would take my glasses off. I would want to be blind.
Guys leering at you?
Yeah.
That's what you're up there for.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, she was just doing it to...
I'm going to stick with radio.
To go through nursing school.
And that's what they all say.
Yeah.
Huh? Whatever, Peter.
Okay. Final note.
Back to what we were talking about.
An Alabama lawmaker is once again pushing legislation that would let employees take handguns to work.
Well, that's a great idea. Have you ever heard of going postal?
Well, think about this, though. These poor guys, their rage just boils over and slams all these synapses in their head, and they got to go home and get their arsenals. This way.
I thought you were going to say something else.
They have to go home and get their arsenals, right?
Yeah, well, this way it's already...
It's already there.
Yeah, right in the locker.
So what kind of evil Republican... Oh, my God, it was a Democrat. Senator Roger Bedford of Russellville, Alabama, said the bill is aimed at increasing personal safety. Oh, well, I got to say, if everybody here was armed...
Just be great.
That'd be great. And he said, I think it's necessary so people have peace of mind when they're traveling to and from work. Oh, I see. It's failed twice before. The bill would prevent employers from barring workers from transporting and storing guns at work. Employees who bring weapons to work would be required to keep their guns locked up and out of sight.
Well, hopefully in something not controlled by them.
Yeah, well, I guess. Well, no,
right?
Well, I guess.
Like you take it at the end of the day.
Leaving your...
Just a big N.O. to this whole thing.
Well, the employers don't want it. The Business Council of Alabama says this is insane.
Especially in the South.
Well, here, the law would not apply to school campuses, and weapons wouldn't be allowed anywhere they are already barred by federal law, wherever that is. The lawmaker says he does not expect any dangers to arise in the workplace if the proposed legislation is signed into law. Here's what he said.
Of course.
If somebody's that crazy, hopefully the sheriff didn't give a pistol permit in the first place.
Oh, which never happens, you dummy.
In Wisconsin, I think I was reporting this last week, these 10 Wisconsin Republicans, they want to end any kind of registration or background checks or anything.
Oh, just come get your guns.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that great? Why don't we just give them away for free?
And there was this business, a gun shop in Arizona, that said that they would not sell guns to Obama voters because they had proved themselves irresponsible.
Oh, my God. And I mean, these people are out of control.
Well, it's what we said earlier, that they have a stridency that's really wrecking this country. I mean, if you can look at countries that had civil war... Oh. Like ours.
Yeah, it was a biggie.
Can we end this on a positive note?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
Well, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Wouldn't it be nice?
What are you thankful for?
How about a 3-day work week and split the work among everybody who's unemployed?
There's an idea.
Hey, we'll talk about that next week.
I'd share.
Got a couple of great interviews.
If you can DJ.
Yeah. What do you, all you got to do is say, hey, that's what?
That's all I do is say, hey? I'm going to talk to you.
Okay. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for the interviews.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
The 12 Days of Riffmas are back. Keep listening for your next chance to win. Details online at WRIF.com. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Economics has never been any college students or high school students' favorite subject, right? We all read Samuelson, Supply and Demand, all that. And let me get through that and get into some interesting subjects. Well, what's been happening to us over, well, really, over the last several decades, we all better become economists, or at least be acquainted with the economy of the country in which we live, the world in which we inhabit, because it's going to determine our future. And if we don't know what's going on, we're going to be in a world of trouble as countries, as families, as communities, and what have you. Now, Ralph Waldo Emerson in the 1840s, you know, that transcendentalist friend of Thoreau and all, said, things are in the saddle and ride man. That was, you know, quite a while ago. Not so long ago, French theorist Jacques Camus said, capital has run away. It's not a very encouraging sense, because rather than being masters of our destinies, it suggests that we are just these insignificant entities, or the whole system is that's just blown about by winds over which we have no control. Now, last week I interviewed Robert W. McChesney. He was the author of a monthly review article called This Isn't What Democracy Looks Like. Robert McChesney is also the co-author of The Endless Crisis, How Monopoly Finance Capital Produces Stagnation and Upheaval from USA to China. And the co-author is John Bellamy Foster. And John Bellamy Foster is joining me today. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Oregon. He's the editor of Monthly Review and also the president of the Monthly Review Foundation, and authors of numerous books, co-author with Fred Magdoff of The Great Financial Crisis, another one, The Ecological Rift, The Critique of Intelligent Design, The Ecological Revolution, Ecology Against Capitalism. A lot here, and we're going to try to figure some of this out. The Endless Crisis, it doesn't sound good. Robert Bellamy Foster, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Hello, glad to be here.
Now, is it all pretty dire? It sounds like it.
Well, you know, it is pretty dire at this point, unless we act to deal with it, unless we take action. If we allow ourselves to just drift in the direction we are going now, I think the economy is going to be bad, the environment's going to be bad, all sorts of things are going to be problems. And so, in the beginning of our book, we actually quote Bruce Coburn, and where he says in his song, "The trouble with normal is it always gets worse." And I think this describes the experience of a lot of people are having in the United States today, and it actually relates to the economic conditions, the underlying economic conditions, slowdown in growth, inequality, as well as deteriorating environmental conditions, deindustrialization, which has affected cities like Detroit and so on. So this is a hard time right now.
Well, that's the key. It's a hard time right now. I mean, the fear of many people is this is going to be the new normal, or as you say, the endless crisis. On one hand, capitalism has always had ups and downs. I mean, major crises. I mean, ones, as I know you know, that like in the 1890s that made the so-called Great Depression look like blips, or ones even earlier, 1840s and what have you. So are we looking at what's going to be forever, an endless crisis, as the title of your book suggests? Or, as you said, I mean, can we intervene in our own history? Or are Emerson and Camus correct? Things are in the saddle and ride man, and we're just along for the ride.
Well, the term endless crisis in our title really refers to economic stagnation. And this is really the main concern of economists, whether they're on the right or the left now, although those who are in the establishment may be less explicit about the nature of the problem and their concerns because they're busy trying to defend the system. But the big concern right now is economic stagnation. And in 2007, from 2007 to 2009, we had what we call the Great Financial Crisis, the bursting of the financial bubble. And in 2009, the recovery started the way it's understood in economics, that is, the business cycle recovery began more than 3 years ago. And but look at the conditions we're in. We have a very, very high unemployment. We have slow growth. And this is a very, very slow recovery, and it may not really fundamentally be a recovery at all. So we have this continual problem. And if you look at Europe and Japan, the other rich economies, the situation is very similar, actually worse. And you can look at this historically, and you can look all the way back to the 1960s, and you can see that our economy has been slowing down basically decade by decade. The growth rate in the 60s was higher than in the 1970s. The growth rate in the 1970s was higher than in the 1980s and 90s. And the growth rate in the 90s was higher than in the first decade of this century. And it looks like we're slowing down even further. So the economy, the growth rates are slowing down. At the same time, we have increased inequality and deindustrialization. The main thing that kept the economy going for a while was the financial bubble. It actually lifted the economy, but that was a false form of growth. Eventually it bursts, and so we're in deep trouble. Now, the economy always goes up and down. There is a business cycle, and so you're going to find some recovery, some expansion, but eventually then you have another recession. But over the long term, the overall economy is slowing down. The growth rate in the United States right now is about 2%, which is way below the historical average and isn't high enough to eliminate the masses of unemployment they have. So we're in a difficult situation, and nobody knows how to get out of it, and that's the problem.
Hmm. The book, The Endless Crisis, How Monopoly Finance Capital Produces Stagnation and Upheaval from the USA to China. My guest is the co-author, John Bellamy Foster. You know, you've written a book among very many called, let me see where the one I was looking for. Oh, yeah, Ecology Against Capitalism. You could certainly reverse that title as well, as I'm sure you would agree, Capitalism Against Ecology or the Environment, because the industrial machine has done so much damage to the planet and continues to the point where some people suggest we're even at a tipping point. If the economy was to expand enough to bring everybody out of world poverty, of which how many of the billions of people are in the around the world are live in poverty and would consume at the level of North America or Europe, I don't think the planet, I know the planet could not tolerate what the waste, the extraction, the manufacturing, the fossil fuel burning and all of that. So it seems like we kind of painted ourselves into a bit of a corner, would you say?
It's a terrible situation, and I mean the concern has been going up even in the last week. I mean it's if you look at Nature magazine, you go to nature.com. Nature is, along with Science, these are the two most prestigious scientific publications in the world. And Nature has an article that just came out by a leading American investor who's asking the scientists to speak out publicly with absolute realism about what's going on because it's so serious, and asking the scientists to be brave and to be arrested, protest and be arrested. I mean, the World Bank came out with a report this last week on what the world would look like with a 4 degrees Celsius increase in global average temperature. The Royal Society in London has just declared in a report that we need a new economic system. I mean, the indications are quite incredible. People are beginning to realize that we're right up against the wall. ecologically, and just from an ecological standpoint, we can't go along with this economy. Meanwhile, if you look at it from an economic standpoint, it's a complete failure right now.
Well, let's go through a little just of the title, really the subtitle of your book, The Endless Crisis, published by Monthly Review. You can go to monthlyreview.org. My guest, John Bellamy Foster, is the editor of Monthly Review magazine. How monopoly finance capital produces stagnation and upheaval from the USA to China. Now, the critics have railed against monopolies, in fact, you know, because they are able to control markets and drive small producers and sellers out of business. But here it's you have it's hyphenated, monopoly finance, or monopoly finance capital. Monopoly finance capital different from the monopolies of, say, 100 and 120 years ago that critics railed against?
Yeah, I think it's a new development. We sometimes talk about monopoly capital. You could call it oligopoly capital, but which means control by a few corporations in industries. But oligopoly is not a very powerful word, and they talk about the growth of monopoly power in economics as a very dangerous thing, and it is, because it means that corporations have the power to control prices, essentially, and block price competition. And price competition is the basis for the claim that capitalism actually serves the interests of everyone. But without price competition, the claims made by economists collapse. So the issue of whether a system is dominated by monopolies is a big one. Now, I mean, at the beginning of the 20th century, you ended up with concentration, centralization of capital, huge firms suddenly dominating the economy. That in, what was it, in 1902, U.S. Steel was created when 165 companies combined in a single year to make the first billion-dollar corporation. And since then, it's been a process of concentration, centralization, mergers, and so on, so that today, and this is in our book, we have a lot of empirical analysis in our book, but today the top 200 corporations in the United States account for over 30% of all gross profits of business, even though there are several million firms in the economy. But the top 200 account for over 30% of gross profits, and that keeps on going up. And so you have an economy that's not the way economists talk about it. It's generally speaking, it's an economy very much controlled by a few firms, and this creates all sorts of problems and inequality and so on. Now, this has been going on for a long time. This has been the history of the 20th century, but now we have an increasingly financialized economy. So you still have these monopolistic enterprises, but they're more and more geared to financial operations than production. I mean, General Motors, a very, very large part of what it does now has to do with financial speculation as opposed to making cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this whole financialized, so you have this kind of monopoly finance capital that we call it. It's kind of a hybrid system that monopoly capital was always characterized by a tendency to stagnation, but now we have this financialization on top of it. So we have what we call a stagnation financialization trap. The economy tends towards slow growth or stagnation, high unemployment, high excess capacity or idle capacity of plant and equipment. And the only way they know how to get out of that nowadays is by expanding the financial structure of the system.
Well, is this
so that yeah. creates bubbles that burst, and so we have this really strange, complex trap in which we're now caught.
Well, you sort of answered my question. What I was starting to interrupt you with was I was saying, is this wealth, is this value that we see on the books of finance capital actually real? I mean, if we told the Walton families they had to bring their $100 billion of wealth, take it out of the bank and bring it down to somewhere and put it all on the table, they wouldn't be able to do it, nor would Bill Gates or anybody else. I mean, we have people that are calling for, talking about this paper money that is not backed by precious metals. But I doubt if there's enough precious metals in the world to the equivalent of the wealth that people claim. So, I mean, is this all just, emperor's no clothes thing? We just say, hey, yeah, they got a lot of money because we see the figures on a screen, or is it real wealth?
Well, it's not easy question to answer. It's real and not real. Economists now refer to the real economy as the economy, basically GDP, right? The area of national income, and we have two price systems in the economy. Basically, there's the national income system, which is really what we call the real economy. It's where there's employment and jobs and goods and services are produced and so on, and that's the area where we generate income as we account for that in our society. The other area is the asset realm, and it's mainly financial assets. Basically, if you own wealth in our society, you don't really directly own corporations or the plant and equipment, or you don't own material goods. What you own is a claim on financial streams of wealth, mm-hmm. and claims to financial assets, and those financial assets can rise and fall in value independently, semi-independently of what's going on in the area of production or national income. So people can speculate on real estate is essentially a financial sector. So people speculate on whether real estate values are going to go up or down. Essentially, they're usually hoping they'll go up in there. They speculate on the stock market and all of these complex financial innovations that have been developed. But these are really, it's sort of speculation on monetary forms of wealth. It's real in the sense that you could sell a company and you could walk off with $1 billion. I mean, you could sell some of these assets perhaps and walk off with the money. But it's also true that financial wealth is very vulnerable, that a lot of it is based on what we call animal spirits and expectations and arcane forms of valuation. And people can suddenly panic, and half that wealth can disappear overnight, that financial wealth. So this is the nature of the system we're in. I don't know if this is clear.
Well, that's clear. I don't know. Tell me whether you think this is even an important aspect to address. I mean, every 2 weeks, my employer puts my pay in my bank account. And then throughout the 2 weeks or throughout the month, I charge everything over $5. You know, so I buy a newspaper for $1, dinners, everything else, the hardware store, I just swipe a card. And then I get a bill at the end of the month and I write a check. So, I mean, that's not money as we traditionally know it. It's just a circulation of what? Of,
credit. Credit, when we talk about the financial system, we're basically talking about the credit debt system, right? It's credit, The financial system is leveraged by debt, and then they speculate on top of that. But the growth of debt actually feeds the financial system. I mean, let's say consumer debt, for example, right? I mean, it's your debt, but it's somebody else's credit, right?
Sure.
And the way it is with most working people, for most people who are on the bottom end of the society, they mostly have debts and they don't have credits. And the credits are where, right?
Let's do this.
Who owns the debt that you owe, right? And that's all about the financial system. And then they take those financial streams, and it includes also what you pay into pensions or insurance payments. All of that kind of pours into the financial sector and feeds it, and they speculate on it in various ways. And the main way in which wealth is created in our society right now, the main way of obtaining increased wealth is not through the production of goods so much as having access to these financial streams and able to benefit off of them. It's really because the wealth comes often from capital gains, what we call capital gains, the growth in assets.
Mm-hmm.
We don't count that as income, but that's actually where the rich are getting most of their increase in their wealth is from the capital gains.
And they're complaining that it might be taxed more. Well, you know, we only have about a couple of minutes, and so far we've done what we call in the business. This program has been kind of what we call a wrist slitter. In other words, it's nothing but bad news, endless crisis, stagnating economy, upheavals. But right at the beginning of the program, you said that we can intervene. Is this Kamat guy not correct? Capital has run away. Can we get back in the saddle? Is it possible, or is it just the system too much of a leviathan?
Well, you know, you can look at it as a game. You know, there's all sorts of games. You sit down and play a game, and the game is determined by certain rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous, in 100 Years of Solitude, Gabriel Marquez has his leading character, says he refuses to play a game where the rules are predetermined, right?
Mm.
He ends up being a revolutionary. But the point is that the way all of this works is determined by rules that have been established mostly by those in power. And we don't have, as Michael Moore says, the alternative to capitalism is democracy. And we don't have that. I mean, I could say the alternative to capitalism is socialism, which for me means essentially the same thing as genuine democracy. But we need to change the rules. We need to why aren't capital gains not taxed? Why is wealth not taxed? Why is it that the 400 richest people in the United States have a wealth that's equal to the bottom half of the population, 150 million people, and their capital gains are not really being taxed? Their wealth is not being taxed. The whole setup is destructive and dangerous, and this kind of economic system, winner takes all. It's not working.
Well, not only is it not working, we may in fact all wind up losing. Well, we're going to have to end this right here. Fortunately, John Bellamy Foster, along with Robert W. McChesney, has written a book that'll give you much, much more information on this, and forewarned is forearmed, and it's up to us. We have the choice of letting things run away from us and just hope, or we can intervene in the world as people have done so much in the past. John Bellamy Foster. Oh yeah, I should say, you for more on this, you should go to monthlyreview.org. John Bellamy Foster is the editor of Monthly Review and also the president of the Monthly Review Foundation, as well as being a professor of sociology at the University of Oregon. Thank you so much for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Rocking Detroit at 101.1 FM and the rest of the planet online at WRIF.com. Detroit's rock station on the web. Thanks for listening to WRIF.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. No, we live in a country where our freedoms are guaranteed. We have a foundation document called the Constitution of the United States, and the Founding Fathers were thoughtful enough to put in the Bill of Rights, which gives us the right of free speech, assembly, press, all this stuff. Isn't that great? So we don't ever have to worry about being scapegoated, right, like happened, say, in Nazi Germany, where Jews were scapegoated for the problems of that country, or in Indonesia, where the Chinese get scapegoated for the problems of that country, and on. I mean, a lot of scapegoating around the world. It's kind of what happens when people can't understand what's going on, and they figure, well, it couldn't be our leaders, or it couldn't be the system. It's got to be them over there. Well, we've had some problems along the way in our nation as well. And I'd like to introduce to you the author of a new book. The book is called Manufacturing Hysteria, A History of Scapegoating, Surveillance, and Secrecy in Modern America. The author is Jay Feldman. Jay Feldman has a very nice literary history. He's the author of the book When the Mississippi Ran Backwards. He's also written a lot for the Smithsonian, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated, Gourmet, and the New York Times, publications like that. He's also written for television and the stage, and he's the author of the novel Suitcase Sefton and the American Dream. His website is jfeldman.com, and we're reaching him in his office in Davis, California. Jay Feldman, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be with you.
So you date modern America with essentially the hysteria, the manufactured hysteria that began with the U.S. entrance into World War I. Is that correct?
Yes. The reason for that is that while nativism had played a role in U.S. history, particularly in the 19th century, with the prejudice against Irish Catholics and Chinese, what we find in the run-up to the United States entry into World War I is a new phenomenon. We find the government harnessing those fears and prejudices, in this case against Germans and German Americans, and using that hysteria that's created to accomplish a crackdown on civil liberties and a suppression of dissent. The Wilson government, Woodrow Wilson administration, had an agency. Wilson established a new agency in the months preceding America's entry into the war, called the Committee for Public Information. It was a propaganda agency, they put out films, they published pamphlets, they put up roadside advertising, and the intent of this committee was to create fear and hatred of all things German and, by extension, German-Americans. So...
And in a way, the thing's foreign as well. Any foreign ideas, which took in quite a breadth of the American immigrant population, particularly ones that were labor and radical oriented.
Right. And that especially intensified right after the war, because the Russian Revolution created a great alarm among the business community. And it was interesting how the fears that were directed towards Germans, German Americans, pacifists, socialists, Mennonites, anybody that was against the war would automatically became suspect. It's interesting how quickly, once the war ended, those fears were suddenly projected upon wobblies, communists, socialists, anarchists, anybody on the left. In fact, there was the Overman Committee, which was studying German brewing interests as they affected German American opinion in this country. And after the war, suddenly they looked like they were out of business, and they just switched the spotlight to Russians and Bolsheviks, and the report they finally issued had an unlikely title, something along the lines of an investigation of German brewing interests and Bolsheviks.
You know, you mentioned along the way the people that were suspect by the government and some of the population were the Wobblies, and we should remind people that's the Industrial Workers of the World, the nickname, and they still exist. You can go to IWW.org and kind of see why they were feared at the time, although they were much, much larger. The book is Manufacturing Hysteria by Jay Feldman, and but you talk about that the hysteria was, let's go for both the words. What manufactured, and you mentioned just some films came out, and was it that successful? And also, did it rise to the level of hysteria?
Well, yes, it really did, to the extent that there were attacks on, well, okay, let's start with the first part of your question, the manufactured. The press picked it up, and the New York Herald, for example, published a list over the course of a couple of months of every German alien living in New York City. Well, if that wasn't, you know, enough, they also published these people's addresses. And they later issued that list in a separate pamphlet that you could buy.
What would be its purpose? In other words,
its purpose was to spy on your neighbors.
Wow. And these German Americans, both immigrants and German American citizens, it wasn't like the 1930s where there actually was, like silver shirts and the German American Bund. I mean, there wasn't, or was there? Was there? Was
no,
among
no, not, nothing to speak of. No.
I mean, there wasn't great sympathy for the Kaiser or anything.
Well, the thing is that among any ethnic group, you will always find an emotional tie to the former homeland.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have social clubs where German American workers would go to eat a bratwurst and drink a stein of beer. So those became, you know, quote, breeding grounds of sedition. As far as the hysteria goes, the attacks, this anti-German sentiment, which was whipped up by the Committee for Public Information and the press, resulted in dozens and hundreds, really, of attacks on Germans and German American citizens over the course of these months, culminating in the lynching of a man in Collinsville, Illinois, on April 4th, 1918, which was one day short of 1 year that the United States had been in the war. So it was a serious business. It wasn't just, you know, an incident here and there.
Well, as you mentioned before, the Wobblies, Industrial Workers of the World, opposed World War One, and yet initially there wasn't great support for it. I mean, I remember reading that President Wilson called for 1 million volunteers and got about 20,000, so they actually had to institute the draft.
Right.
So, I mean, and it wasn't like we were attacked. It was this war that was so far away in Europe. It's amazing that some American citizens just became literally, to, you know, echo the title of your book, Manufacturing Hysteria, they became hysterical. Is there a mass psychological explanation, or are we just looking at the history?
No, it's just history, and it's partly, you know, the dark side of human nature. Let's be clear about this. It happens everywhere.
Yeah.
You gave a couple of good examples in your introduction. But the thing is that, and Peter, as Americans, we've always been taught to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And so we've been given, I'd call it a whitewashed version of our own history. Well, let's just say we look at it through rose-colored glasses. Many of the dark parts of our history are not taught in the textbooks. But the thing is, and as I mentioned in my book, and you'll see how it carries through really to the present day, this tendency, because we haven't really acknowledged it and incorporated into our full identity, we seem destined to repeat this history over and over and over again. I think if we were to go back and stop and look at this, we might get a different idea of how we can behave, because there are so many admirable and honorable things about this country. We can hold ourselves to a higher standard, and this would be one of the areas where we can improve.
The book is Manufacturing Hysteria, A History of Scapegoating, and we've only talked about scapegoating so far, but the rest of the subtitle is Surveillance and Secrecy in Modern America, and we're dating that from the run-up to World War I. My guest is Jay Feldman. He is the author. It's published by Pantheon, and the author's website is Jay Feldman, JFELDMAN.com. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, Werbe. .com. Well, that old saying, it's been hacked apart so many different times that I'm not sure the exact wording of it, but essentially says that if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. And most of this seems to come about during war. I mean, when the Constitution is gone. So Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. Wilson probably the World War One era, probably the greatest attack on civil liberties in American history. And then you get up to the Vietnam War and World War Two, with the Japanese being put in concentration camps. And we go to the modern day. And so people could look back and say, that was terrible what Roosevelt did to the Japanese. That was terrible that Wilson, passed the Espionage Act and all this. But now, Muslims, they were the people that attacked us. So although that was bad, this is a real and current threat. So we jump right to the modern 9/11 era, and there's you hear talk radio, with right-wing talk radio. They're saying, who attacked us? They weren't Christians. They weren't Hindus. They weren't Jewish. They were Muslim. So they, yeah. Talk to me a little about that.
Right. Before I do, I'd like to disagree with one,
sure,
just one minor point that you made, that Wilson administration was responsible for the worst attack on civil liberties. I would put that as into the Cold War. I would, if I had to identify one era where civil liberties were came under the worst attack, I would say it was the Cold War era.
We can argue another time, but I forgot about that area. The communists. What about the communists in the 50s?
Right,
that was horrible. All right, let's
it was a
tough race. I would agree. Okay.
So let's also establish one other thing: is when we talk about minorities, we think racial and ethnic minorities, but they can also be political minorities. They can also be religious, or they can be sexual minorities. It's largely forgotten that 5,000 homosexuals lost their jobs in the federal government during the Cold War McCarthy era because they were, quote, security risks, unquote.
They could be, quote, blackmailed. That was the rationale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so now getting to your question about Muslim Americans and Arab Americans, it's the same pattern. Thinking is, there's a boogeyman out there, and we need to keep an eye on that boogeyman. And while we're doing that, we're also going to keep an eye on everybody else. So the surveillance, of course, has reached such a fine degree with electronic devices that they now know from your cell phone basically where you are all the time, if they want to know. There's a lot of collateral damage that comes with this. A lot of innocent people suffer along with the few evildoers. And remember Benjamin Franklin saying, those who would trade liberty for security will have neither.
Right.
Here's the thing is, oh, and it's not only Muslim Americans and Arab Americans right now either. It's also Latinos. There's a pretty heavy-duty anti-immigration movement It started in Arizona, but it's spreading. In Virginia, they're passing a similar law to Arizona's SB 1070, which requires immigrants to have their papers on them at all time. Now, I don't know who they're afraid of in Virginia. Who's going to cross the border from Delaware into Virginia?
Maybe Irish or Polish they're concerned about. Obviously they're not. I mean, because there's a lot of illegal immigration from European countries and also from Canada, and that's not who the prejudice against. It's always these brown-skinned people that are taking our jobs, right?
Yeah, and also we also have to point out that homophobia is also on the rise. But here's the key point that...
Wait a minute. You think so? That it's, I mean, you know, it's weird when you have periods of adjustment of social attitudes. You have a greater and greater acceptance of, say, minorities, whether, like you said, they're religious or racial or sexual, you know, gender, whatever. And so there's certainly greater acceptance of gay marriage, of gays in general. On the other hand, there is this backlash by people that can't deal with it.
So here's the key to what happens here and what people need to think about. The curtailing of any the civil liberties of any particular group, be they ethnic, racial, political, religious, sexual, the curtailing of any minorities group is the first of any minority's rights is the first step towards the curtailment of all of our civil liberties. People think that, I mean, we've been taught and we tend to think that democracy is a given. It's here forever. Well, all you have to do is look at Weimar Germany to see how quickly democracy can disappear.
1920s and the early 1930s, right.
Yeah. And remember, the National Socialists, the Nazis, didn't overthrow any government. They were elected. And Hitler didn't overthrow anybody. He was appointed.
And a key thing to remember that, he never had a parliament, he never had an electoral majority. In fact, in many cases, the Socialists and the Communists had a greater vote total combined. I don't think they ever got more than like a third of the votes. But aggressive people that are that aren't concerned with the niceties of civil liberties and political democracy have a capacity that's frightening.
Yes. And remember now what Pastor Niemöller, who lived through Nazi Germany and was eventually interned in a concentration camp himself, he said, and this goes back to my earlier point about the infringement on any groups, any minority groups' rights is the first step towards the infringement on all. He said, Pastor Niemöller said, first they came for the trade unionists, and I wasn't a unionist, so I didn't speak up. Then they came for the communists. I wasn't a communist, so I didn't speak up. And then they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't speak up. Then they came for me, and there was nobody left to speak up.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the formulation about that us the need for us to be concerned about everyone's civil liberties, the guarantees that we have under the Constitution is extraordinarily important. Looking at the obverse of that is the book by Jay Feldman, My Guest, Manufacturing Hysteria, A History of Scapegoating, Surveillance, and Secrecy in Modern America. You know, we were just mentioned earlier about the prejudice against immigrants, and this is not recent, as you indicate in your book, Manufacturing Hysteria. Back in the 1930s, there was what they called El Repro... I was going to stumble over my Spanish. El repatriado. The repatriation in English. Yeah, and people from Detroit, for instance, that were American citizens were just scooped up and dumped back in Mexico.
Well, there was a very large Latino, particularly Mexican community in Detroit at that time. And during the Depression, the fear in this case was they're taking our jobs. Many of them including American citizens, were, as you say, scooped up and sent back to Mexico. Many of those people, even the ones who are not citizens, had been in this country for decades and came into this country when there were no, when there was no border enforcement. In other words, it was not against any law to cross into the United States from Mexico when these people entered. But technically speaking, yes, they were not citizens. They were, many of them, sent home. And families were broken up because they had children who were American citizens by virtue of being born here. And in many cases, the mother would stay with the with the children, and the father would return to Mexico. As well, many Mexicans who were citizens, Mexican-Americans who were U.S. citizens, decided, look, I don't want to deal with this. They just left. Now, that was nationwide, between 500,000 and 1 million people were sent back to Mexico, some of whom had never even seen Mexico. Now, I find it astonishing that our history textbooks would somehow have missed. I mean, that was a lot of people. The thing is that it happened again in the 50s. And the Eisenhower administration had an Operation Wetback, and it took them 6 months to deport 500,000 people, the same number that it had been sent home in a decade, 20 years earlier. And now, so this is the third time it's happened. What's wrong with this picture? It doesn't seem to be working. That approach doesn't seem to be effective.
There's actually a documentary about this. People in the Detroit Mexican community.
That's right. Found about.
Yeah, there were so many people that were ashamed of that. And if you look at Repatriado, I think I'll put a link on my website as well. Mm-hmm. We only have a little bit of time left, and as you look into the future, and this is always a hard one. I mean, are we more at risk to lose civil liberties? Less at risk? Is there a greater understanding among the population? Because every time we're under attack, and I mean, there's two. I mean, the feeling we're under attack, and the other part of it is economic bad times. That's when people start looking for the scapegoat, right?
Right, right. That's very true. Well, I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't say for sure. But what I can tell you for sure is that we're in much greater danger than ever of being spied upon because of electronic surveillance. And the tendency towards secrecy in government is still surviving. President Obama, as much as I admire him for certain things, pledged open government when he was elected. Well, it didn't take him but a few days in office, you know, to carry out the same kind of secret policies that all of his predecessors did. So, as far as our rights, we have to remain vigilant because without that vigilance, we don't have any control over our government or what happens to us.
Well, you don't have a crystal ball, understandably. And secondly, though, when you say we have to be vigilant, and I'm never sure what kind of form that vigilance takes. I mean, one of the things we don't want to do is we don't just want to watch it. We have to create a political will to not let anybody's civil liberties or civil rights be withdrawn because they might, or because the big capital they, and that means being politically active, politically engaged, not letting politicians get away with using manufacturing hysteria. They did. Jay Feldman wrote this great book called Manufacturing Hysteria. See other eras in our history when our rights and liberties were under attack. The subtitle is A History of Scapegoating, Surveillance and Secrecy in Modern America. And I appreciate you bringing in surveillance and secrecy right at the end there, because we never really got to it. That's why people write books, because they look at these these events and these trends extensively. It is published by Pantheon, and you can go to Jay Feldman's website. It's jfeldman.com, jfeldman.com. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Jay Feldman, thanks for being on my broadcast.
Oh, the pleasure's been mine, and thank you for your interest.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
WRIF.com, where every day is Black Friday or Thursday or Black something or other day.
Hoo-ah!
Because the Riff store is now online.
That's the deal.
That is the deal.
You asked for killer Riff wearables and more. Now you've got them.
There is.
Just a mouse click away. Built for the Motor City by Made in Detroit.
That's what this country was built on.
Check out the Riff store now at WRIF.com. Now, more Riff Rock. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.